Yes.
All right, Mr. Chair, we're ready.
Okay, we call the meeting February 11th, 2013, to order. Would you please take the roll call?
Yes. Commissioner Christensen.
Here.
Commissioner Demarest.
Here.
Commissioner Dirksen.
Here.
Commissioner Robin.
Here.
Commissioner Sherwood.
Here.
Commissioner Tuttle.
Here.
Thank you. Okay, this time is reserved for comments from citizens that can comment on anything that is not on tonight's agenda. There's a sign-up sheet. I don't see a sign-up sheet.
I didn't make a sign-up sheet this time.
Oh, okay. Do we have anyone that would like to make a comment that, that is not on tonight's agenda? Okay. Then we'll move on to approval of minutes. January 14th.
We approve the minutes.
Okay, it's been moved by Commissioner Rodland to approve minutes. Any second?
I'll second it.
Seconded by Commissioner Dirksen. Any discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Okay. Next minutes here for approval is January 28th. Commissioners?
Make a motion to approve the minutes January 28th as written.
Second.
Motion made by Commissioner Demarest to approve the minutes. Seconded by Commissioner Sherwood. Any discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Okay, done. Next item, we don't have a public hearing tonight. Workshop is the Monroe Municipal Code, Chapter 18, the 80 Sign Code Amendment. And all of you running this?
Yeah, okay. Start off. We're back tonight for another workshop on the sign code. In our last meeting on January 28th, we went through this sign allowance table, the code from the Monroe Municipal Code, the text narrative portion of the sign code, and the other documents leading to what the sign illustrations and the design guidelines. Had quite a bit of discussion, and there were a number of specific issues raised during that meeting, and I'm hoping we can go back and revisit those tonight. And today, we sent out a packet Friday, but today we posted on the web and also made copies for you of some updated versions of those, of some very minor changes, updates from Friday's packet. So the printed copies you got tonight are current today. Hope this doesn't cause too much confusion, but a couple of things. We want to touch on things like in the past we talked about murals and sandwich signs and wayfinding signs and some things like that, and some specifics within the narrative part of the code. And in relation to downtown, what we plan to do is leave the current sign guidelines in the downtown master plan in place. Now, the downtown signage has been, I think, pretty well addressed in Tom's work with the new sign guidelines and the code changes. But we are going to leave that guidelines section in the master plan intact, partly to preserve the context of those guidelines within that entire downtown master plan, in a historic context, and use that as a, I'll call it a secondary reference for signage in the downtown commercial zone. But the code changes and the sign design guidelines and so forth is going to give us, I think, a pretty strong package of code that we can both apply to applicants and interpret, and this is important to enforce as we move forward. But I'm going to let Tom Beckwith lead the discussion on these updated changes and where we're at, and I think we'll still have a few specific things to take with us after tonight, and we'll bring those back on the 25th. There's a public hearing scheduled for the 25th. We can talk about those, any final things, loose ends, and hold that public hearing, and I hope we can forward a put together recommendation that night for this code. So back to you, Mr. Chair, and we'll proceed with our consultant.
Thank you, Paul. Tom, you will push to
sure.
Go ahead. Thank you.
Let's go with the code first, very quickly. Since the last time I saw you, we scrubbed everything that you kind of settled on that night, but I flagged in purple some of the things which are still for you to consider and decide what to do with. And the main thing in the code itself was I incorporated the digital standards. If you look over what you got in your handout, those would be colored purple or gray if you got a black and white.
Just one second here.
This one, right? Should be the code update right there. That fourth one down. Next one down. No, the fourth one right there.
Let's just go to this one. I think this is going to be here. So which one is it?
Yeah.
No, why don't you go to my flash drive? Let's just do it off the flash drive.
Technical difficulty, just in
the space. Go to the fourth, right? Not right there. No, I'm sorry. It's in a different sequence now. No, that's not it. That's off my flash drive? Go to my flash drive.
I think it was on your flash drive.
Well, that's not very often.
Is that your one?
There. Go to the fourth one down. Right there. Right there.
There we go.
There you go.
One.
Okay.
Okay. Can you reduce it to fit the screen?
Yeah.
There you go. And then just flip through to you see the first purple. Stop. All I did here was flag. This is the historical sign. It says that basically if it's anything that dates from a historical period, like a wall sign, that you can be reconstructed, even though it's maybe non-conforming, provided that the reconstruction stays true to the original. Okay, so it was there all along, but I thought I would flag it because that was an important issue. Okay, unless there's any questions, stop me anytime you have a question.
Yeah, thank you, Tom. So where in the ordinance, then, do we incorporate historic sign? I didn't see it in the table anywhere.
There, exactly.
So we've got a definition for something that's not in the ordinance?
An historical sign is an exempt sign. But this says, means a wall or projecting sign where the sign is proposed to be restored or authentically recreated as evidenced by historic photographs, even though non-conforming.
So by being non-conforming, that makes it an exempt sign?
Historical signs are exempt.
Okay. So if I looked at our exempt section, then it would be identified.
Should be in there. Should be in there.
So our exempt is going to be section 060?
We'll keep it in mind. We'll flip through and see if it's there. Should be in the text, not in the table.
Okay, it's T, yes. Thank you.
That was a test.
No, not at all. I didn't see...
Well, I'm sitting up here wondering, damn, did I really do that right? All right. The other was, I added in the limited duration sign. You pointed out that I had not called it out in the definitions. That matches what's on the table later on. Okay, flip ahead. This was the original text for the changeable message electronic sign section, and we're going to insert instead the material that we went over when we went over the digital signs themselves. So, flip next.
Tom, excuse me, while we're here, the item J that needs to be reworded because it doesn't make sense the way it's worded right now. I could see it because it was extracted and put the sentence put back together. It says
J here?
Signs that odor, no, J down below.
Oh, here.
Yeah. Signs that odor or visible matter no longer.
Should be signs that emit odor or
yeah,
visible
right,
matter.
Yeah. That's just a point I was trying to make is
right.
That it needs to be cleaned up.
Good catch.
Okay. Next.
Thank you.
Now, stop. These are the changeable message or video display signs. And what we're doing is taking out the old language and inserting this language that we developed based on the digital signs. We're saying that A, changeable copy by electronic or video means, may be utilized on any permitted freestanding bull, pylon, or monument sign, provided that the sign is at least 35 feet in any direction from any other sign that uses electronic display and is 90 degrees perpendicular to the flow of traffic. That's what we talked about at the last session when I was out with you. Okay? I think the keys here, remember that there's really, digital can be applied in almost anything. Your sign ordinance talks about size, location, what kind of sign it is, and so on, but per se, anything can be digital. And I think that the biggest impact that's happened on the sign codes is as China has really gotten aggressive about developing solar panels and digital displays, these things are very cheap. And that's happened in the last year. So before, if you saw a video flashing sign out here, that was maybe a $35,000 or $45,000 investment. It's down around $5,000. So with those kinds of costs, you can expect to see any sign that anybody wants to put up is undoubtedly going to be some kind of video or digital. The rest of this text was here. This is what I pulled out because I think we have a better statement and a more current statement than what's in purple. And it says only one EMC, EMD, or video sign is permitted per site for each street frontage and with the development fronts, and the sign is visible from the public right of way. So basically, you get one of these on your site. You can have a wall, you can have freestanding, you can have all kinds of signs, but the way we've written this, only one of those can be digital video display. Next. They're subject to the following restrictions. The copy cannot change more than once every 8 seconds. The interval between successive displays is zero, since no approaching driver cannot perceive any blanking of the display screen. No special visual effects of any kind, such as moving toward or away from the viewer, expanding or contracting, etc. Message sequencing is prohibited. That's the old Burma shape signs where you have one and then it depends on the next one coming in. Electronic message center display does not exceed percent of the total sign area permitted on the site. I left that blank. In most cases, you'll find that they'll want 100%. And frankly, you may as well allow them to be 100%. When we were dealing with the old digital message sign that scrolls across, we tried, and you'll still see it here, some limit on what percent of the sign can be that digital scroll. But for video display, the whole backlight is basically the sign. And I see no reason to try to determine what percent of that is video or digital display, as they call it. It doesn't have to be a video versus a typical printed sign.
Tom, wouldn't you suggest that, you suggested before you want to have a border, you know, something that sets it aside from the sky, and, you know, the rest of the thing. Wouldn't that be taken into account here also on a digital display so you don't get it doesn't float or get lost in the surroundings?
Good sign design, a frame is useful. But you remember, we size the signs based on their content, not on their frame. We left the frame outside the sign area. So what you'll see is that they'll start to frame those. They'll do them themselves. But if we define the allowable sign area to include the border, then everybody would have the propensity to shrink that down to where it's almost nothing.
Okay.
I think that you'll see the first videos that went up were just like a TV screen put up on a pole. But increasingly, they have this, now they're having the same kind of framing that they do anything else.
Okay. Thank you, Tom.
I think the only issue that would come in the framing is if there's a tendency to try to create huge frames just to get big visual impact, even though your sign area is smaller. And I think at one time we talked about, should there be a percent relationship between the frame and the sign area? But that's kind of difficult to do, because if you go into things like monument or pylon signs, you have a lot of mass, even though you have a smaller sign area. So I doubt that you're going to see a tendency to try to create these big, huge portals in order to mount the sign. So it may not be necessary to worry about that. Now, video display signs are subject to the following restrictions. Any portion of the message using video display methods shall have a minimum duration of 2 seconds. Calculation of the duration shall not include the number of frames per second using a video display method. There shall be, can't read that.
Zero
seconds of still image or blank screen. Audio speakers shall be prohibited. The displayer does not exceed, again, percent of this total sign area permitted on the site, which I'm saying these two should probably just let those go and be 100%. These measures come from a series of studies done on what was considered to be distracted in these kinds of signs. And essentially, these standards, 8 seconds of the messaging sequencing prohibited and so on, seems to be the industry standard. That doesn't mean that somebody won't come in and contest them. But these seem to be kind of the standards that the feds looked at, and that some of the more recent studies, which are pretty well documented, looked at between what was distracting and what was not. Now, the issue is, this is all normative. I expect in a year you'll probably have other opinions about what these should be.
Tom, can you explain to me the difference between copy that can't change more than once every 8 seconds and video display that shall have a minimum duration of 2 seconds?
Video is just that. It's an image that changes, like television.
So video then is not copy? Copy would be words, text?
Copy is a frame that then flashes over to another frame.
I guess I don't see the distinction. If we're talking content of a frame, we're changing to content of a frame. We've got two different time frames here.
If you're watching a video, which is constant motion, I mean, your eye and mind adjust to the fact that it's a video. And the issue there is just how fast or slow it is, and that there's no blank spaces between the video. It's a constant loop. But when you're looking at a frame, like a slideshow, the issue is how quickly do those frames go from one to the next to the next to the next. And the 8 seconds between is to allow a certain amount of time for you to comprehend what's there before you go to the next one. If it's too slow, the tendency is to be distracted to wait for what that next frame is going to be. If it's too fast, as opposed to video, the studies indicate that that can also be distracting.
Okay, video really is just fast frames.
Video is film.
But isn't it fast frames, really?
It's fast frames.
In the old sense.
Yeah.
And when I read this, I was counting 8 seconds. You know, I'm thinking about how 8 seconds is to me. As if I'm sitting at a stop sign or sitting in traffic, it's a long time. As if I'm going 10 miles an hour, perhaps down Highway 2. Not so long if I'm going 55, because I'm getting past it.
This, where you are, what kind of road you're on, and what your speed is certainly affects that. But the 8 seconds seems to be a normative standard that works in what we call city traffic. If you're out on I-5, it'd be a different duration at a different speed. But the mind's eye says if you're watching a film, you're accustomed to it, the film, and as long as it's not stop action or fast action, your mind kind of comprehend that. But if you're looking at a slideshow, then the speed between the slides tends to be a major factor in whether or not it distracts you.
So would it be fair to say then that the video display is going to be a moving visual, mm-hmm. and the copy is going to be static?
The slideshow.
Which is static, right? Yeah.
Right. A fixed image.
So the Everett Event Center would be a video display most of the time, except when I choose to put copy upon it?
I'm not familiar with it. I don't remember seeing that.
Jeff?
Yeah, when they're showing the hockey player shooting the puck, that's video.
Sure.
When it says Tuesday night, Silver Tips are here, that's static.
And so no video shall be shorter than 2 seconds. Which almost becomes 2 seconds. Me, becomes like a snapshot if it's a video of 2 seconds, isn't it? I mean, that's just kind of. I don't know. Maybe I'm splitting hairs, but it just. I'm finding
any portion of this video. Any portion of the message that uses the video display method shall have a minimum duration of 2 seconds.
Okay, 1,001, 1,002. We're done.
Now, calculation does not include the number of frames per second.
That's
true.
Right.
But
it's
minimum.
Well, I'm sure brighter minds than mine have figured this out. And
this gets pretty technical. All I can say is I pulled this from what was considered the least distracting results of all the studies that were done. And I'll give a copy of that study over to you when I leave.
The concern on the 100% from my perspective is that we've got signs that are being talked about up to, or sign allowances up to 200, 300, even 400 square feet in certain surface situations. They could literally choose to put a tall video screen up there that runs continuously, if I understand you correctly.
And I think the largest sign that's allowed is 100 square feet if it's your single tenant.
Well, it's 180 down here, Highway 522 and Main Street.
Single tenant?
Uh-huh.
Okay, then all of that could be a video. That's true.
And it could be potentially 45 feet high based on what's currently projected. Suggested.
If a highway, yes.
Okay, all right. Thank you.
I think the issue, if you try to set the percent, is then you're into percent of what size sign. So if you had a smaller sign and you said, well, only 50%, then you can get down to the point where it's a very small image versus your example where 100% of 180 square feet is a lot of image here.
Thank you.
I have a question on the 100%. Should that be clarified in the sense that total sign area permitted on the site, let's say, is 400 square feet? The first reaction might be that I can put up a 400 square foot video display sign.
Your total signage covers your walls plus your freestanding. Freestanding has a maximum size, and your wall has a maximum size, depending on your site and your building frontage.
Okay, so there is a distinct difference between the total area of the site, which might be 400 square feet, and how big that video display sign could be. I'm not sure if that's really clear there.
But I think his point that the largest surface I think we have is the SR522 signs. That's 180 square feet. That's an 18 by 10.
Yeah. It's a pretty big TV screen.
Is that a state-regulated sign, or is that local when it's on a state highway?
Well, it's not on a state right-of-way. It's on private property, so it'd be your control. But the state is considering whether or not to allow digital signs on state highways. That's up for consideration. I don't know whether it's pro or con. It's just up for consideration. If they did, that would be on right-of-way, not on city road.
With the percent limitation here, would it make more sense if it had a caveat or a second part of the statement that it wasn't to exceed the maximum allotted sign amount for any particular type of sign? Because as I read this, it talks about 100% of the total sign.
Oh, it does. That's right. I think that's the important point. It should say percent of the sign. I think you're saying the total sign area.
That's cumulative.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. And that's not, I think, what we're intended to say. And again, I left the blanks in the percentage. It's up to you if you, whatever you want to fill in there.
If we've got a size limit on freestanding signs or wall signs, by default, that's going to be a percentage of the total sign allowed on the site anyway, is it not?
Well, I think what this was after is per sign, as opposed to the total on the site. Now, we said here, in this definition, that you can have one sign that's assumed to be a freestanding pole or monument and perpendicular to the roadway, so it's not parallel to the roadway. And the issue of being parallel is you're more likely to pull off to try to view that than if you're seeing it in your line of sight as you drive down the road. That was our assumption. And our assumption, too, is you could only have one and there had to be spacing. So that means it's the freestanding, not the wall.
So maybe there's a little more work on this section.
I think you need to be very careful with this section because once the horse is out of the barn.
Is it clear now that the percent of not total sign, but just
per sign.
Per sign.
Should be per sign.
Okay.
Well, I think that's a contradiction. So if we're allowed to have one freestanding sign of 120 square feet, can we have the sign allotted 120 square feet, or we have 100% of it? Same thing.
Would you be, first off, you're going to fill in whatever that percent is. My thought was you may as well allow 100%, but if you did, and you're allowed a freestanding sign of 120 square feet, and you meet these issues that it's perpendicular to the roadway and only one that's spaced a certain amount of distance apart, then under this you would be allowed to have 120 square feet as digital.
I think if it's 100%, the statements aren't necessary. But Diane, I think I might have cut you off. I'm sorry.
You may not. If you go to 100%, you could probably scratch that. But I left that open for you to decide because the digital messaging, which is different, you do have a 50% limit on how much of the sign that can be. That's a scroll. Okay, next page.
I want to suggest before we move on, see if we have some agreement that 100% is allowable. Or if we do want to reduce that, then we'll have to specify what that percentage is. But I agree that if it's 100%, then you don't need to make that statement.
This is strictly for video display, correct?
Correct.
That's what we're talking about.
Well, this calls out, it's done twice. See, this is electronic message center. That's anything that's electronic. And this is the video display. So you have two options there.
Right.
And if you go to 100% on both of them, then you may as well take those sentences out.
Okay, so number five above there, would you, if we say, for argument's sake, we said 90%, we would remove the word total on that one also?
You should say per allowable sign. Per allowable sign.
Right.
Because then elsewhere in this, you define what the allowable sign is.
Because that could end up being a pretty large video display.
Yeah, I think you... The previous area would prevail, but this would add confusion if we don't clean it up.
Right.
So if there were a 100 square foot allowed freestanding sign, the video display area could be 100 square feet, or if it's 50%, it would be 50 square feet. I guess it's a matter of if we want to regulate the potential maximum size of the allowed video display, not the sign itself, but the video type of sign face.
Okay, so I'm trying to get it straight in my mind. So for the copy sign, we could, for all extended purposes, we could say 100% and remove the sentence. You know, for copy type things, but for video, we might want to say we don't want to use that 100 square feet or 180 square feet and cut that in half.
That'd be up to you.
Yeah. I would, personally, I wouldn't want to see a huge video sign out there. I would try to limit how big that they got.
Most? It depends what the industry would tend to do. Let's say it's the Ford dealer, and he puts up the 120-square-foot sign. He's probably going to have a static Ford dealer on the top portion and the video and the rest of it. Mm-hmm. I mean, that would be the typical response, but it wouldn't prevent them from incorporating the Ford message into the video itself, mm-hmm. and now it would be 100%. So if you have preferences, then you need to specify them. And that's why I left these blank.
With technology out there, they can probably do multiple frames within that one screen. They could have four up there 90% of the time, and then a separate frame that has different content below it.
They could. That would be a more costly video. It's not just the screen itself, it's all the software and everything else that runs it. And most of them, when they incorporate the business name into the message, they just incorporate it into one simple message, because to go to split frames like you would on a computer, then you're reducing your impact. Then it gets smaller and smaller and smaller.
Jim?
Yeah. So under this, the way it's set up, could someone have, say, an 80-square-foot video sign on the wall of their building?
No. Not video.
So
it can only be freestanding.
Of that, I'm just, you know, if you have 80 here, then you have 120 out in the street. And therefore, everything that constitutes your maximum is video.
Yeah, but the way we've defined is video can only be perpendicular. It can only be freestanding. Okay. Now, you can have digital wall. But I think the issue with video is that it gets more distracting, and therefore we want you looking down the road when you see it than trying to turn your head and see what the video is doing on the wall.
Thank you. Dave? Tom, you've alluded a number of times to the concern about you open the door, let it out. And I think you are so absolutely correct on that. I'm going to use the office building I work in, the company I work for, as an example, because I know that we would never do it. But we would be able to put up a video sign that's 32 square feet right out here on Main Street. As I understand this with mixed-use commercial, mixed-use neighborhood commercial.
No, stores. Digital is precluded from Main and Lewis.
Where does it say that? Because I heard you say
it's in the table. It's in the table. It's in the table.
That's in the downtown.
In the downtown section. The downtown section in what we call, I think you call it the historic core.
Which we're not in when we talk about this out here. Mixed use commercial zone and the mixed use neighborhood commercial zone are not within that downtown core.
Correct.
And as such, as I understand it, the video and or chain of message signs would be allowed. So let's take, for instance, Dr. Wilcox's property down here where there's a dentist's office on part of it. Historic part of town, but not in the downtown historic zone. Do we want to see one's ability to put a 32 square foot video sign on this street out here where we've got these mediums that we're so proud of going through what is a historic part of town? And that is one of the, let the cow out of the barn. That's what we've done. And it could be a monument sign, it could be 4 feet high, 5 feet high, 6 feet, 8 feet wide, with this 24-hour day video playing as you drive down Main Street. Folks, do we want to go there?
No. The current draft only excludes them from your historic core. If you want to exclude them from the whole downtown zone, you can do that too. But you need to determine where you want to exclude them.
But again, the area I'm talking about is not a part of the downtown core zone.
No, but it's up to you to decide how you define that. But you need to define where they're excluded or they're going to be there.
They will. Well, I would certainly be all for including the mixed-use neighborhood commercial in that prohibition at a minimum. Which goes from, as I recall, where the Ford dealer was down here on the corner of Village Way, the westerly terminus, termination of Village Way with Main Street, down to the historic downtown zone. It's that whole stretch from here.
Does that include the master sign that's out there now?
That's in the downtown.
Okay. And that's a good example. Unless you exclude it, you're probably going to see more.
Is it easier to decide where we want to allow them to decide where we want to exclude?
Half does one, six the other.
Not necessarily if you're going for they're allowable in way fewer places.
Well, the way it is now, certainly they're allowable in a whole lot more places than not allowed.
Unintentionally, for sure.
That's right. Most ordinances weren't written to distinguish digital or even video from a sign. And you see, now you're in the position where you got to decide because we've made it explicit in the definition. So one option would be either exclude them or the other option would be only allow them, like in general commercial or service commercial, or whatever zones you decide.
I would certainly support that.
Okay. If you were to hedge your bets, go that route and see how it pans out and decide whether or not you want to expand it anywhere else.
Is it effective to just put on a map, this is where you can have that type of sign and this is where you can't? Have you ever seen that done?
In a zonal sense or a
just
site sense?
On a map. It doesn't matter what zone it is, just where it is on a map.
That gets difficult because in essence that's like spot zoning. So it's easier to define it in the zone than it is to try to put it on a map, because if you put it on a map, then you're down to being property specific about who can, who can't have them. And if you're side by side with another property that's zoned the same way, and he gets the dot and you don't, I don't want to be here.
I totally agree with Tom on that. Regulating this kind of use or prohibiting by zone is really the simplest and easiest and the fairest way to enforce that and regulate it.
Question. Is on the table, is a changeable message sign, is that what we're talking about here?
Changeable message are the upper part. Yes, those are digital. Yes.
Digital, not the video? Not the
no, video is different. The way
I don't see on the table, at least not right off, on the table where it references video. So.
No.
Because
it's only referenced here.
Because right now it's allowed everywhere.
Well, yes. On your old or current ordinance,
yeah.
Since you don't distinguish video from anything else, you just say sign, you don't define the fact that it hasn't happened.
So my question, I guess, then, in the long run is, would we go back and put video into the table for areas or zones that we would allow?
I think you would put it by zone.
By zone.
Yes. And you may, since in this case we're talking about video as freestanding signs perpendicular to the roadway, you would designate it as freestanding signs only.
Okay.
And then decide which zones, whether that's, you know, general commercial or service commercial.
Okay. Great, thanks.
Tom, can you go back to the slide and just to clarify when it says one sign?
Okay. Back up a page. Page 26.
So when it says one sign, only one EMD, that means both phases, correct?
Yeah.
Okay. Because I just want to be clear that means both faces. Because right now it's only allowed on one face in certain situations.
In your current quote?
Yeah.
Okay.
The Fireplace Center, for instance, they were limited. They couldn't put it on west-facing and east-facing because of prohibition of the code.
So. Oh. The presumption here, I think it's in the definitions, a sign means both sides.
Okay.
So if we have 32 feet, for instance, in the MUNC, that's 16 each side on a sign that's perpendicular? 32 each side. So a total is 64,
really. Well, but as we imagine it, it'd be 32.
Because it's all you can see from one side.
Correct.
Okay. So, yeah.
And since we're making them perpendicular, you can guarantee both sides are going to be
sure. Video.
Okay. Next. We did this next, yeah.
Before we move on, can we maybe get some resolution on this as far as the commission goes? Is there consensus that it should be limited to certain zones or only allowed in certain zones?
We need to look at a map and say where we want to allow it.
Right, you got a map on.
Well, a zoning map.
Yeah. There's a zoning map on the left side of the back wall. And it's dark, obviously, but if you think about general commercial, that's the North Kelsey area. That's really the extent, the biggest extent of general commercial. There's very little service commercial in the community. The industrial is Farland Industrial Park. That's basically all the industrial and commercial, those two critical areas, critical mass areas of commercial and industrial. And beyond that, and we have excluded it, not allowed the video in downtown commercial, not just this, not just historic downtown, but downtown commercial zone, but the entire downtown. And it might make sense to also exclude it from both, at least the east mixed use part of the corridor, the mixed use neighborhood center. We have a digital sign in St. Vincent, which is in the mixed use commercial. And I think certainly, I don't know if we've excluded it from residential areas, maybe all residential areas excluded, which would leave general commercial, possibly the industrial park, which would be those two areas that you can kind of see on that map just by the color, but, or exclude them, restrict them only to general commercial, which is primarily the Highway 2 corridor in North Kelsey.
So, Paul, any of these, like the St. Vincent, are these going to be grandfathered in, or are they going to, so that they can continue, or are we going to address that as, is that going to be addressed, and if it's not allowed, they have to take it down?
No, they're grandfathered in.
They are grandfathered in.
It would be essentially a legal non-conforming use, but legal.
Now keep in mind, there's a difference between digital. Digital can be flat screen. I mean, it just is sharper. Or it can be the slideshow from video display. Video display is the film. So I think your residential areas don't allow the digital. Everywhere else you can have digital. But the video display, from what you're saying, should only be on Highway 2 or that kind of an area. So you need to distinguish between the two. They're two different things.
But they're not necessarily distinguished in the table, are they?
No, not yet. Then that's something you have to decide. If you want to only allow video in your service commercial, then we need to state that's the only place it's allowed. Right now, the table only excludes them from the historic core.
Okay, so why don't we come to a consensus on that particular thing right now, the video? Should we want to have that added to the table as a separate item?
Yeah, I think so. I think it needs to be.
Okay, I'm in agreement. I think it should be put in the table, and then we can, allow it or not allow it by zone by doing that.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay.
I think it would make it easier as people are reading their areas, and they'll know whether or not they can have one, and it won't be a question, right?
If that's what you do, then when you get to the service commercial, go down to freestanding signs, then we would have the digital call out there. I mean, the video display there.
Right, okay.
And it would be clear, we incorporate it into the text, the only place we would do that. They're only allowed in the zones designated in the table.
And then could we also, in that table, put the size allowable, 100% or 90% or something. And then remove that paragraph from the...
Then we'll probably drop it into the footnotes as well as being in the table itself.
Okay. I think that will be a lot more clear, at least in my mind.
It's complicating it substantially, but...
Well, thank you, Jeff.
I just wanted to let you, from an enforcement standpoint,
yeah,
and from a permitting standpoint, you're adding complexity to the business owner that's trying to get the sign, and you're also adding complexity to the permitting process from the staff side of the coin.
Okay, my question then is, would that be by putting it in the table would make the complexity, or by removing those sentences
from the percentage? The percentage, I think, is the part that I'm most nervous about.
Okay.
You start changing the percentages based on zone, and square footage is based on zone. Pretty soon you've got, okay, we've got 16 foot in this zone, and 40%. We've got 32
foot. But if we left it the same for all zones, there would be no complexity.
Correct. I would think that would be less complex.
From what I hear you saying, is allow digital 100% in all zones, except residential, where you've already excluded them.
Right.
Only allow video display in the Highway 2 corridor. Then the question is, of the video display, what percent of the sign do you allow, want to allow to be video display?
There you go.
Can we help?
So we're back to the videos along Main Street here.
No,
Highway 2.
What zones we are allowing?
But you said digital. You said digital then everywhere?
Digital everywhere. That's the solid frame or the slideshow. And then video only on Highway 2.
We don't have to decide that. We can treat them differently.
They're two different things.
So one thing at a time. Yeah. Okay. We're dealing
with the video.
And the consensus then is that the video will be allowed in general commercial?
We haven't gotten there yet.
Yeah.
But we're getting a map to look at.
As far as I know, all we decided, we're going to put the video into the table as a separate line item.
That's the only consensus we've had.
Yeah.
Okay. And then that line item will go in whatever zones we
decide to put it in.
As they recommend.
Okay. That's where we are at this point. So then the next decision would be as to which zones. Jeff?
General commercial, service commercial, and light industrial northwest of State Route 522.
Is that how the tables are broken up? Right now?
No. A lot of the people who have industrial properties along Route 2 want the ability to put this type of signage on
video or digital?
Video.
Okay.
Yes. And I think that would be an enhancement to business to be able to do that. Because since our LI zone permits so many commercial uses, we would hamstring them by not allowing them to have access to signs similar to our purely commercial areas.
Here's the industrial part. What you sure was talking about.
Okay.
Yeah. Finally, industrial.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
Here's the
Kelsey area.
North Kelsey general commercial area. Downtown commercial is here where we do intend to prohibit the video, West Main Street. This is actually all mixed in with the two mixed use zones through here. Excluding them from either one or both of those, but we do have this major intersection here, which is part of the mixed use commercial zone, that
if we do the industrial,
wanting to be able to do video display.
Well, does that mean there will be video displays on Franklin Boulevard?
Potentially, yes.
Up to 200 square feet in size. Bigger, it's a bigger building, like, say, the Circle Building, which how many feet of frontage on Franklin Boulevard there, probably?
A lot.
600, 800 feet? So they could go to 200 square feet, 10 by 20 foot video sign perpendicular to Rylands Boulevard. Is that where we want to be?
Yeah.
Well, I'm going to vote no on that one as far as consensus goes. I don't think that's where we want to be. And I have a concern that if we allow it on the north side of the industrial park, then all of a sudden we've got this row of video signs down along Highway 2 that are granted across the railroad tracks, but it just, it's billboard city if you've got 10 by 20 foot signs.
I don't really care about Highway 2, but I do care about Friends Boulevard. We have a school there. And
it's only the industrial zone where it will be allowed, though, so only at the
just on those three Friends blocks? Or
yeah, from Pisano's north.
Right across the street from the lake?
Yeah.
And there's quite a few good-sized buildings in there. Got a multi-tenant building that's on the south end, certainly with enough frontage between it and the street, probably for a sign like that.
Well, if it's a multi-tenant, then it has to be a multi-tenant sign. It doesn't mean the whole image can be one tenant.
Well, but the images could circulate or cycle through the various tenants, I'm sure.
It could.
I think we've got to be really careful, folks, about what we're going to suggest to our community.
Commissioner Dull, what's your...
I don't love the idea of video displays on Frylands. I don't care about Highway 2. That's fine. It's already like a mall there anyway, so.
Okay. I know how you feel.
Well, just one clarification. Okay. I think we've got Highway 2 that goes through our commercial district, which is basically east of the 522 interchange. And we've got Highway 2 that's west of the hospital, which is a totally different corridor, in my opinion, than what we have on the other side. So I think there's a distinction there.
It can be, but the fairgrounds is there. I don't have a huge problem with that.
And I think the fairgrounds is pretty subtle in their advertising.
The fairgrounds they have a digital sign.
They fall under county code.
Yeah.
But, not city code.
Yeah, but and also there's the...
But if the...
One of the storage places over there has a digital sign also, I believe.
Yeah, and then it's all the way down to the gap. A couple of gas stations and McDonald's, right. A Jack in the Box. It's still pretty commercial.
Unless the courthouse wants to put up a digital sign. So I don't have any problem on that corridor either. Jeff, you said.
Well, I think that I could amend that to general commercial, service commercial, and light industrial along the State Route 2 corridor. That keeps it off for islands, but gives those people equal footing who have commercial uses in the light industrial area.
Yeah, I'll do that
commercial version.
Yeah, the Highway 2 is fine. What is considered the light industrial?
This is great.
Okay.
Here.
And there. So what is that on this bottom side? This... And then those light industrials.
This is Main Street. These are light industrial signal.
We don't want anything there. So it would have to be.
It would be only this section is right there.
Yeah, that would be fine.
Okay. So we'd have to, in the table, we'd have to somehow make sure that we differentiate what light industrial areas we are allowing these video signs.
I assume you'd say properties fronted on US 2.
Okay.
Yeah. Well, technically none of them front on Highway 2 because the Burlington Northern Railroad tracks on
the
highway.
But that's how you would call it out.
Yeah. Okay.
And you've got
visible from Highway 2. Yeah.
Internal industrial properties too that may be interested in that too.
The inside the industrial park is, I don't have a problem with that either. It's hard to find stuff there anyway. They could have better signage. More clear.
That's true. Okay, so I think we do have some consensus as to...
One more. Well, we should consider the area at 522 and West Main Street, car dealers. That's mixed use. Commercial and some service commercial at that intersection. It could be qualified for those two zones on fronting 522, which would be basically limited to that intersection outside of the Highway 2 corridor.
It seems appropriate for a car dealership to have a video sign.
But that wouldn't be the whole zone. It would just be the highway sign in those zones. You're allowing a highway sign here, and you're allowing a highway sign there. And so if you wanted to do it just due to the highway signs, then the highway signs could be video. Not the zone, but just those highway signs.
Yeah. I'm for that.
Okay. So I'm picturing this now, this 10 by 18 foot sign with a height of 40 feet off the ground over the Dodge dealership. This video playing all the time.
Could be, that's what you do.
A tall sign.
That's what you decide.
TV screen up there, 45 feet high, the way it's proposed right now, running video.
That doesn't really bother me.
Okay.
It's a huge building and a huge parking lot.
It probably wouldn't be any more distracting than a 150-foot balloon thing.
That's true.
Okay, have you decided, or do you want to move on?
Yeah, I think, Paul, we've got our consensus on that pretty much.
I think so.
Okay.
Okay, back to the coordinates.
Paul, one of the things that we need to keep track of are our changes that we're making at this point, so that council understands the decision. I was hesitant to get on board with the consensus changes tonight. I would love to, if you guys did this at the public hearing, so that it's all on record, so the council understands what your decision-making processes are. We excluded this zone for video for this reason. So we're just going to have to be careful in our staff report that when we take it to council, that they understand too.
That it's detailed?
Pardon me?
That the information is detailed?
Right.
At the public hearing, will there be a presentation of
At the public hearing, there will be a clean ordinance up there.
Okay.
With clean table and clean everything. And it sounds like we're refining that to the point where there's not going to be a lot of amendments at the public hearing, but council will want to. We just want to make sure that we represent your rationale as the planning commission as to why the mixed use zones don't have video, and we're excluding the industrial zones elsewhere in the city, things like that. So.
Yeah, but I tend to say that I like to work these things out, before we get to the public hearing, so we don't have a lot of discussion going on up here and people going sleep or whatever because we're having all these discussions. I'd rather do it now than at a public hearing.
We can explain rationale for public hearing, can't we?
Yeah.
And then it becomes part of public record. Dick?
On the light industrial video signs, was the consensus that anywhere in the light industrial zone, as long as it didn't front on Freedom's Boulevard, was okay for those signs?
That's what I heard.
Is that where we're at?
I think
that's what I heard.
So McDonald's, Chevron, YMCA, you're going to exclude those?
No, those are in the service commercial.
Are they service commercial in that area?
Yeah.
Right. Are we allowing service commercial?
You would exclude YMCA because it is on light industrial. Maybe partially on both zones. Yeah, it's on both zones.
So we're going to allow service commercial on Friday.
Yeah, it was a service commercial, but not light industrial on Fridays.
How would you do that now? So that would be the Chevron.
That would be Chevron and
that's Chevron. That's Chevron.
Okay.
That's the one. This is YMCA. And this is part of YMCA.
Okay.
I'd rather not see it on
the plan. And this is all
that okay. Area.
This is
the shutdown in the McDonald's feels like house two to me.
Oh, okay.
It's right there only. But I don't know. With the hall.
Yeah.
Okay.
Dave, some of our voices don't carry to the tape as well. I think when we're talking, it might help other folks. And I think Bridget maybe put your mic a little closer. Just past experience, comments I've heard from other people say they can't understand what we're saying from the tape. So,
just, okay.
Thank you. Sorry, Bill.
That's all right. So we're going to consider like the Chevron, McDonald's, whatever part of Highway 2. Because actually, that if you want to think about it this way, it's on that side of the tracks as the light industrial is going down Highway 2 also. So I guess I don't see an issue with it.
I would like to see that the YMCA is not part of that, though.
That's in the, right. That's not in the service.
Okay, is it? Okay.
And the size is limited to the building size, right?
Right.
It's not like it's going to be 40 feet in the air, 200 square foot.
That's all the
difference, right? I like the idea of keeping it on the highway.
Right.
Somewhere, that's right.
That's the time tension, so projecting distance.
Mm-hmm.
How would we go about stating that call if we wanted to say, you know, keep it to the highway businesses? Like down to the Chevrolet and Dodge dealerships and
if we define general commercial as eligible and the industrial park and service commercial that abut Highway 2, that have frontage on Highway 2. That would leave out, say, a lot that's one lot off of Highway 2, maybe south of McDonald's, Chevron. But we're limited to that Highway 2 frontage and Highway 2 corridor. And would also allow it within the industrial park.
Okay.
But some of it would have to restrict it from Freilands Boulevard.
Well, can we do that, or is that like spot zoning?
I wonder, is there a need for video electronic signage within the industrial park on Ty or on 149, some of those cross streets within the subdivision? The industrial park?
There might be. I don't know.
There's so low traffic. I think there's other ways to get customers. I don't think that's...
You're not going to see them want to spend the money for a video in there.
I agree. So we limit it to the Highway 2 frontage.
Okay. And then at the 522 intersection...
And the highway signs that are permitted at the 522 Main and 522 Highway to intersection. Those two interchanges, intersections.
Okay.
Dave, we take Jeff's rationale that the light industrial businesses in the park don't need the video signage. Why do the ones that are in the park next to the highway need the video signage?
Because they tend to be commercially oriented. That they're out on the highway for a reason.
Okay.
I've had three businesses inside the industrial park ask for this specific.
For the video?
For the video. So Pilchuck Distributing, Clearview Spirits and Wine, they're retail. They would like to have the video opportunity. Big Box is another one. I don't know about spot zoning, but, you know, from a regulator's point of view, allowing it in the entire zone is the better approach with specific exclusions than to allow it for specific fringes. I just think
As we go through, and I would rather see it all prohibited than to start nitpicking which property's going to have it. I mean, you're getting right down into the nuts here. So
I would agree with that approach.
Well, I thought I had your mindset there for a second, and then you blew it on me. when you said, you know, we could say exclude it and then from a certain area or not, but then you said, I'm trying to think of how you put it, but and then you could say you could exclude it in certain.
And the way you would do that, if you didn't want to limit it on Frylands Boulevard,
right?
That's an arterial road. So perhaps you have a treatment for arterial roads to limit the signage at that aspect. There are ways to do it to help. You're getting into the aesthetic side of it now, instead of the advertising side. And we've gracefully avoided that collision up until tonight. And we're definitely there right now. So it sounds like there's a split on video. And as Tom has said, digital is the wave of the future. And that Monroe sign that's right behind you guys, that could be digital.
Yeah, but I'd rather not have Frylands Boulevard look like Vegas, you know, if we could avoid it.
And the question is, will businesses do that? When you have a single tenant like Natural Factors that has a massive building, I happen to know that building won't have any signs other than maybe an MGF on the side of it because they're very private in what they're doing there.
Okay.
There may be another user that might want to. So, again, if you're prohibiting just on Frylands, are you going to throw out all the other opportunities for everybody else in the industrial park and other industrial areas, for that matter? We have an industrial area surrounding City Hall here.
But I thought the consensus was the industrial park is fine, but we just didn't want to see it on Frylands. So how do we...
Is Frylands considered a parkway?
Boulevard.
It's an arterial.
Well, arterial is a bad word, though. It's too general to the rest of the city. Do you have another distinction for Frylands?
Yeah, Frylands Boulevard.
Or properties facing a park. Or...
However you do it, you need a good rationale for either excluding or including. And if you're excluding it from Frylands, what you would want some justification that Frylands is a parkway, unlike other arterials, and therefore that's why you exclude it. If you're using including, like along Highway 2, then you're saying you're including properties which have visibility from Highway 2. But whatever technique you use, you got to have some rationale that distinguishes why it's different from any other area of the zone or any other area of the city.
So do we want to just say that we say you can't have video in the light industrial zone?
And that's the whole Frylands industrial part.
That would cover the whole thing, including.
So do we have any?
No, because if there's businesses in there that want to have it, and it's within,
kind of I'm making that for that.
Well, that's where we have to make a suggestion how we want to draw the line. Like Jeff said, we could say take the whole light industrial area and say no, we can't have video. Or you can say we can have video except or however we want to word Frylands Boulevard is exempt from that. So.
And I suggest that we regarding the video signage within the industrial park, that we allow it, whichever direction we're heading, either exclude it except for Highway 2 frontage, or allow it in the industrial park with the exception of frontage along Frylands Boulevard, and figure out how to
how to codify that requirement.
I go along with the second half of that. Personally, I really don't want to see private starting to.
So would that include Vegas. Would that include the lake and when their little thing that they're building on the lake? Would that, you know, that's kind of a little, that's public. Are they, how big of a sign are they going to be allowed to have to advertise whatever it is going on?
Well, it would be restricted. It wouldn't be able to have a video.
Okay.
So. Could have a message board.
It could have a, yeah.
Okay.
A message board. Yeah. David?
Go along with the Highway 2 frontage and the interior industrial park in any property that either faces, abuts, adjoins Lake Tai Park shall not be allowed. So that would take out the Lake Tai building, for instance. It would take out any of the properties in the industrial park across the street from the park. And I think it would define it pretty well.
Take out the commercial strip also.
It would.
Yeah.
And I can see where if you don't take it out and restrict it, there's a big sign going up on the Lake Tai building that's aimed at everyone that's down at the park. And I'm not sure we want that for our park. So that would be my suggestion if we're going to go that route.
What does staff think of that?
We can probably massage it.
I think the intent of what I suggest is pretty clear.
It has a rationale. That you need a rationale.
It's tied to the park space.
You're thinking.
and well, think about the north end of the park and the old block plant there.
Right. That that intersection of 522 and Fryland's / Roosevelt. That's a service commercial on both sides, north and south of Highway 2, which could be potentially be a place for, in a business sense, video display.
But there's nothing that in my suggested language or shape would say that a building on Lake on Fryland's Boulevard, take Cirque for example, couldn't put a video sign on the north side of their building or on the east side of their building. It just can't be on the west side. The same rationale that would apply to the block plant. They couldn't put it on the south side because that adjoins the park. It could go on the Fryland's Boulevard side. It could go on the north side of the building on the Highway 2 side.
We might be able to extrapolate it to accept it from properties that are adjacent to, or however we word it, public open space, park space, those public recreation areas, which would obviously include Lake Tai.
And
so we'll figure out a mechanism.
Would that include the school property also?
Right.
The different zone, public space.
And, okay.
But okay. Public zone, like right. School,
that's
park.
That's true. Okay.
I think we can make that work.
Okay.
Jeff? Make a request, Paul. I believe the maps that are on these computers are out of date.
This map is.
And if maybe if it's possible to get the most recent zoning and comp plan maps on the computers, that would be great. Thanks.
Okay. Next.
Okay. Did we get that beat up enough?
Yep.
Well, that was the video. Do we have to do the other one now?
Okay, yeah, the copy. Digital display. That's called changeable copy, right?
Mm-hmm.
Changeable display. Right. Dave?
I'll pose the same question. Do we want changeable messages to enter into mixed-use neighborhood commercial zone? Is that what you want to see as you drive down Main Street into historic downtown?
What size are these signs?
the changeable commercial, what size can they be?
You have one changeable message sign in your historic downtown right now. I think that's a bank sign, time, temperature, whatever.
Let's exclude historic downtown because that's not changing. I mean, that's lockdown tight. The historic main neighborhood is lockdown tight. There is no digital content that's allowed in historic main.
And I think that's great. Makes complete sense.
So now we're talking about just the mixed use neighborhood commercial and mixed use commercial, which is basically
the rest of the
Union Bank all the way up to 522.
Right.
That's the zone that we're discussing.
So, Diane, to answer your question, looking at the mixed-use neighborhood commercial, mixed-use commercial zone, a changeable message sign can be 50% of the allotted sign. And, for instance, a single tenant monument sign can be 32 square feet, so half of that could be 16 square feet, 4x4,
okay,
or 2x8, could be changeable message.
Okay, thank you.
And I would suggest we strike it out of the mixed-use neighborhood commercial at a minimum, certainly.
I agree. Jeff, how do you feel about that?
Sounds easy.
Diane?
Yeah, I think that sounds good.
Diane? Would you? Okay, I think we're all agreeable on that.
Staff approval.
You're limiting a sign possibility for aesthetic purposes. So I just want to let you know you're making that decision that Main Street's going to be kind of this lockdown static environment. So I'm just letting you know.
Okay. Well, we are not limiting anything. This is what we're recommending.
Understood.
So, okay. Yeah. This can all go up in smoke.
Okay, next page then.
And there will probably be some smoke.
I think we will come back and after we've been working this code for 6 or 8 months, I'm sure we'll find some tweaks that need to be done. And if there are things to be reconsidered like this, then it'll be a good time to reconsider them, however it ends up.
Here's the last piece here. Electronic message centers and displays and video display permits are limited to 1 year and must be renewed annually, subject to an assessment of the sign's performance and impact on traffic safety, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. The reason is your ordinance itself now, when you give a permit, you give the location, you're given the size, you're given everything else. But these signs, the whole issue is, are they performing according to what you specified as the sequencing and the ambient light and everything else? And what usually happens is once they're up, the operator starts doing whatever they want. And unless they have to come back and are subject to the possibility they could lose the sign, you don't have any control over them. And once a year seems to be a reasonable period. And the problem is, if you only say, well, once a year, you come in 1 year, at the end of 1 year and you're cool, we'll take all the restrictions off, then you got all the horses out of the barn then.
David?
Who makes that determination?
It would go to staff.
I'm sorry?
It would go to staff. And I think you usually do this on exception basis. You get a lot of complaints and you know they're not performing. You're going to know right away that sign's a problem.
And it's not a subjective decision.
Well, you had your performance standards there before. You had your performance standards there before, and they're either meeting them or not. Ambient light, sequencing, time between frames, and everything. Those are the only things you can really monitor.
So I look at the purposes of this code on page 1. Those things can't come into play in that language then?
I'm sorry?
But one of the criteria is... And the other purposes of this code, it's kind of a catch-all.
How so? I'm not.
Well, when we look at the purposes in the code on page 1, we've got 8 or so different things that we're trying to accomplish with this code.
Correct.
Are we taking it from an objective review to an objective or subjective review at that point?
No.
Potentially?
You're saying when you have to come back at the end of the year, you're being measured on the criteria we had a couple pages before. What was the difference in the ambient light? Did you stick to it? on sequencing, message sequencing, on blank screens, and those other things, did you perform according to those criteria? If you did not, then you may not have your permit renewed.
Can I suggest then that we might be better off saying the requirements of this code versus purposes of the code?
Substitute assessment. I don't think we've said either way.
Well, we said pedestrian distractions and the other purposes of this code.
Oh, I see what you're saying.
And yeah. Purposes is really broad.
Criteria and the other criteria of this code. That'd be a better
requirements
way.
Of the code. Right. And that way it puts it back in an objective
sense. Fine, we're on again. Okay. Yep. Keep going. This is the one that we fixed. Remember the question about how aerial power? Yes.
Wait. Got a question.
Yeah.
It says limited to 1 year, but something in here that says you can't contact those people and if in case they're doing something they're not supposed to be.
Well, if they started doing something they weren't allowed, you could shut them down, just like a bad song.
Okay, sure. You got a limit. Okay, do that.
And I have a question. Jeff, would this likely be subject to a fee every year? Because I don't want this to become onerous on someone who happens to have one of these types of signs. If they're complying and they're doing everything fine, this becomes something that's onerous, especially financially. Would that be the anticipation that if it needs to be renewed, will there be a fee to renew?
The fees are going to be set by council, by resolution. You can do that then. You're not coming back in for a whole new permit about structure and power and everything else. You're just coming back saying, can I continue?
So kind of checking in without having to pay a fee and fill out a bunch of forms.
And remember, we wrote the ordinance to say council will set whatever fee structure, so council could be free just to say, you don't repay the fee, you just are allowed to continue. But if somebody violates the standards, you can shut them down at any time. You don't go for a whole year with the violation.
Basically, it would be like a business license.
Yeah.
With a little bit more review, potentially.
So when the fee resolution comes up again, we'll have to have a video annual renewal fee or something along those lines. It'll be whatever time is required to review that.
And that would be up to council to set.
Right.
Well, do they all have to be reviewed, or can it be just based on complaints? Or
if there's complaints, it can be reviewed at any time. But the way we wrote it, it said once at the every year you have to come back otherwise.
But what Jeff just said is if we do that and the staff has to spend time reviewing all the signs, then there would be a fee involved. And that's what the question was. We don't want to have a fee involved.
If I were staff, unless I got a complaint, I probably wouldn't worry about it. And I could probably tell right away whether they're meeting the performance criteria. In fact, you probably know within a month whether they adhere to the performance criteria. It's not going to be that hard. You just drive out and look at it.
Unless there's 25 of them they have to drive out and look at.
All the same day, yeah.
Maybe.
That's true.
Excuse me, before we jump to page 30, I have a question on page 29.
Okay.
I ran into a wall here as I was reading through this. I got down to number 5 on the
electrical raceways.
Electrical raceways. I had no idea what that is. It's not in the definitions.
It's probably not called out as electrical raceway. It's what's behind the sign letters. So when you see on the side of a sign, that's where all the power is. And so the power runs down those conduits and goes into each letter or into the face of the sign.
Okay. Could that be defined then somewhere so people?
I think it is. I don't think it's called electrical raceway, though, but I think it's in the definitions.
Is it
somewhere? I'll double check that.
Do we change the term? Match them up then, so we don't have people like me running into a wall.
Okay. It's where the ponies run.
Yeah. Okay,
except they're powered.
Okay. Thank you,
Tom. Go on.
30.
We did this, so keep going. I think that may be the end of these. Oh, non-conforming signs. Remember, one of your issues was standard codes say that the minute you adopt or update the ordinance, then that your non-conforming period starts. And what we wanted to say is, which occurred after the date the sign was installed. So if they became non-conforming with your code 10 years ago, they're non-conforming 10 years old already. You don't get to renew it each time. Follow me? Sure. Because you built in here a 10-year amortization on non-conforming signs. So it's important the date that they became non-conforming.
But isn't it? That's right, which would be the date of the adoption of the code that made them that way.
That's right.
Which would be this code?
No, it would be whatever code made them non-conforming. And if they were still non-conforming under this code, but the date they became non-conforming becomes the code that affected it to begin with.
And that might have been 5 years ago.
Correct. Now remember, if the 10 years expires and there's a hardship, they can go to the hearing examiner and state their hardship and have it extended.
Is there in the sign industry a standard for what constitutes a historical sign? Because you get into this, it's on I think it's a historical sign,
which was exempt.
Usually, and you can see even in the definition, when it says it proposes to be restored or replicated based on historical photographs, and that's what, you know, you're going back and saying, okay, prove that it existed in this state at some point in time. Now, you know, history all depends on how old you are. So, I mean, I think the point being in the downtown plan to try to establish the date that, you know, there's different building dates in there. And your downtown is kind of an eclectic mix of 1890s and highway commercial 50s. So the way the historical sign says, if you can pull out the signs instead of the 1950s is what it looks like, then you can consider it as an historic sign. Okay. Let's see if we can get them through the rest of the ordinance here. That was it. Okay, go to attachment 2. Attachment 2, second from the top, right up there. Attachment 2. And let's look at, these are the sizes that are currently in the table. It's probably easier to look through this first, and then we'll go to the table. So these are on your downtown and mixed use, and this is approximately to scale. So it's showing what your current code authorizes. So windows, 20% opaque, 20% transparent. Awnings and canopy, fascia, we call it. That's 40% of whatever that is. Under awnings, what we call blade in lieu of, that would be this underneath here, 6 square feet. Blade in lieu under awning is 16. Projecting, this would be the projecting sign, 20 square feet. Wall directory, that would be this. Now, by the way, you see this was the only one which has a transom windows in it, and for the purposes of illustration, we're assuming this is a mixed use. This is the lobby versus these are individual tenant stores. For wall sign, you have 2 square feet per 1 linear feet of frontage. So that's what it will amount to on this tenant space, that tenant space, and that tenant space. Remember, the dark area is the sign itself, and we're presuming all of them would have some kind of frame around them. And then your sandwich sign is 6 square feet. Now, since this is the multi-tenant portion, you see, it would measure the whole building length, it would get 100 square feet. So that's what they would look like on a typical two-story building downtown. Now, by the way, the 2 square feet per 1 square feet is the high end of most ranges. Usually for downtown buildings, it can run anywhere from 1 to 2 square feet per linear foot. And you can see here that you're pretty much filling up those spaces here. Some of these tenants, depending on where they are, will probably use it all. In most cases, though, they will probably use a little bit less just for their own purposes. But you can see what that amounts to.
Tom, I'm looking at the table, and maybe we're missing something. Do we need to have a cumulative sign amount on a building like this?
The only time you use the cumulative sign amount is when you had freestanding and wall.
Okay, so there's no freestanding here.
Right, so we didn't have a total cumulative because, you see, if you were this tenant, that was your space, these are the only signs you're allowed to have other than the projecting. And you see, you'd get 20 here and 30 there. To do a cumulative here, the problem is this may not be one complex.
Well, plan, because I'm looking at the wall multi-tenant building, which this would be, right?
Right.
And we're showing a maximum area of 100 square feet. It's 2 feet per one square, one lineal foot, but we're way over 100 square feet on that wall.
Well, but you look at the length of that building. That would be the issue. How do you define the multi-tenant? If these are all office spaces up here, and this is their lobby, your issue would be, use your linear foot here, or is the whole length of the areas that your multi-tenants are in?
When the footnote says, or not the footnote, but the note on the table says, 2 square feet per 1 foot lineal tenant building frontage per street frontage up to the maximum, and the maximum is 100 feet.
So 100 square feet, you mean?
100 square feet of signage, yes.
For that multi-tenant complex.
So a 50-foot wide building would max out at 100 square feet of sign, as I understand, for the wall signs. It just, something doesn't seem to be connecting. If we've got a multi-tenant building, and if you've got, you estimate what, 15-foot units there, for instance? So
these are 5-foot blocks.
Okay, so what, we got 1, 2, 3,
so 70 feet.
So a 70-foot building, which based on our code would be allowed, well, calculated out to 140 feet, but we're limited to 100. And your depiction there's going to go way above 100, isn't it?
If this is the multi-purpose, the multi-tenant, then your issue is, do you measure this multi-tenant linear foot? And this is another tenant, and that's their linear foot, so on and so on.
So, am I confused?
That's true. No, you're probably true. Probably accurate. If you count the whole thing as multi-tenant, then the whole building cannot have more than 100 square feet. You'd have to divvy it up here, 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 and here.
Am I reading this wrong, or is anyone else reading the same way that I am?
No, you're right. If you consider the whole thing multi-tenant and these are part of the tenants, then yes, you would only have 100 square feet for the whole total. If these are independents, and this is an independent with these multiple tenants, you could end up with this configuration.
Well, even one tenant at 15 feet in your drawing is over the limit, isn't he?
No, 15 feet is 30.
And he's got 30 plus what's over the doors, or that doesn't count?
No, this is just the wall. This is just the formula for the wall.
What's over the door in the drawing? There's another 4 square feet there, right?
This is the canopy, fascia canopy.
And that doesn't count then toward that?
No, because there's no cumulative.
Okay. So we're just talking the wall then?
Just the wall. But I think your point is, if the whole building is multi-tenant, then the max is 100 and you've got to split it up between his tenants.
It'll never work.
If each of these is considered a tenant and this is considered the multi-tenant, then you have two formulas.
So, Paul, I think we need to revisit the language in here.
Yeah, I think we would consider this a single multi-tenant building.
That's limited to 100 square feet of wall sign.
I don't think we would break up individual tenant spaces on the ground floor versus tenant spaces on the second floor. I don't think that we would consider the entire building and the maximum allowed for this building.
It would be 100 square feet?
If that building were condo.
If this were an owner, then this is the depiction you would get.
So what determines multi-tenant versus tenant? Is it if the building owner is the one that's applying for all the permits, that makes it multi-tenant for the entire building? If individual tenants within the building apply for permits, is that the distinction?
I think the way your ordinance reads it out, the multi-tenant is defined by the ownership first. So if these were individual owners, and the multi-tenant owner was this guy, then you'd have 4 applicants.
Okay.
And then the formula would run against each applicant. If there's one ownership for the whole building, then the 100 square feet would apply to everybody in the building.
Gotcha.
Okay. And as the way the table represents it, whether single tenant or multi-tenant, the maximum amount of signage on the walls is the same.
Right.
The way the table represents.
So if this were one tenant in the whole building, it would be 100 square feet for the total building.
So somehow in the table, I think that the verbiage needs to be in there that indicates the difference between a multi-tenant with one owner versus a multi-tenant with multiple owners.
We would look in the definitions to see how we define multi-tenant. How did we define that?
Okay.
Well, definition 100, we say multiple occupants of building means a single structure housing more than one type of retail, business, office, commercial, or manufacturing venture.
We're not saying about ownership.
We're not.
Not at all. Yeah, we probably need to clarify.
We call a multiple building complex as being under one ownership and control.
But that, I think
that's not what we have here.
No, but I think we need to define the multi-tenant as one owner, one controlling ownership of multiple tenants, regardless of how it's done.
That would make
the table. This thing, that's what we've done in the past, is based on ownership. The tenant is not an owner in the building.
Still,
the tenant is a business within a larger ownership, like a strip center that has five retail stores.
Yeah, but you could have somebody own this and he has a tenant. And a different owner here and a tenant, a different owner here and a tenant, and then one owner with multiple tenants. So I think the definition should point out it's based on ownership first.
So would this then be what is defined as the multiple building complex, or how would this particular example, how would that be defined?
If we use ownership as the first definition, then if this space is owned by one owner, they will come in and apply against this formula. If ownership, the whole thing is owned by one entity, that's the multi-tenant.
Okay, but if it's multi-owners in one building, what is that? What is it called? It's not multi-tenant anymore. What is that referred to?
It'll be a condominium.
Well, I guess that's something we have to decide. Should this formula apply to the whole building regardless of how it's owned? Or should the formula depend on how the ownership is divvied up?
Because in this example, right now, the way it is this does not meet what the table says. Because it allows, for a lot more square footage of signage than what the table allows for. So this complex here is not actually defined in the table.
Correct. We don't have a clear definition.
Right, but
I'm sorry, Tom. I'm reading this further, and I'm going to backtrack a little bit on the multi-tenant because of what it says: 2 square feet per 1 lineal foot tenant building frontage. In which case, a 15-foot-wide frontage would give us 30 feet of wall signage. So we are, it sounds like, maybe taking all these units individually, and this building could end up with hundreds of feet of signage. Jeff, I see you're looking at it again. Are you seeing the same thing that I'm saying now?
Yeah, you're still maxed at 100.
Well, but you're maxed at 100, I get to become a tenant building frontage, which doesn't work for upstairs.
Right.
But it does work, it appears, for the lower level.
Well, here's another problem. What if this were condominiumized and this guy came in and he wanted to apply for his sign permit? Does he have to negotiate with all the other owners about what piece of that total he gets?
These are better questions to ask now than when someone's standing at the front counter, isn't it?
I would also be concerned that the first 2 tenants out of 5 might come in and use up all the allowable signage area.
Right.
what is the maximum signage on a multi-tenant building downtown?
The way this formula reads here, it would be 100 square feet if there were one ownership.
But if we look at the table, there is no limit, as I read this further.
No, there's. If you look at the table, this formula is in the right-hand column, well, and then there's a maximum.
There's a difference, though, because the formula in the right-hand column on multi-tenants is 2 square feet of one lineal per 1 lineal foot of tenant frontage.
Up to the max.
Which would be, as I read now, 100 feet per tenant.
Oh, okay, not building frontage, just tenant frontage.
So if you've got 10 tenants in here, you could have 1,000 square feet of signage on the base of this building.
No, I don't have a table in front of me, but I think that max is for the building.
Yeah.
Well, 60-foot wide building with 5 tenants below and 5 tenants above would give us 1,000 feet of signage, roughly.
If they're all individually owned.
Well, if they're multi-tenant units.
Well, the tenant would be this formula.
Not according to the table.
Yeah, because it has a max.
Do we have a building in town? Good set description.
Sure. The
yeah, you have a couple.
Yeah. Jeff, is it the language in here? You're looking at it.
Well, I see it. And it says up to maximum. And is that up to the maximum for the tenant, or is that up to the maximum for the building?
The building.
And it says tenant building frontage.
Right.
In the right hand column.
In the right hand column, right here.
Yeah. It says.
All right, then what I think what we should do is we should stick to this up to the maximum for the building, and then they would have to allocate that 100 square feet out amongst those 4 spaces.
And then it's not going to work very well.
Oh, I don't know. This is a lot, as I said.
We've got to remember that the heading over where the 100 is in the table says area maximum per sign, not total. That's per sign.
Yeah.
And they're allowed one sign.
That's meant to be my homework here.
I think your second reading of it is more accurate than like that's 100 square feet per sign.
Right. You're looking at downtown?
The biggest sign you're going to be able to put on that is that one. And everybody else is probably not going to hit that maximum because they're just not likely to have the funds to do it.
Okay, well, first off, in the right-hand column, a tenant should come out. It should just say a building frontage. And then the other, it should be... It still has to say area maximum per sign in the top column.
It doesn't say per building, but per sign.
No, per sign. And I guess most of those would be per sign. So we would need to modify the right-hand column to say up to the max for the building.
Which would be calculated based on the 2 square feet per 1 lineal foot.
Which is a generous formula. That's the upper range of the formula, most downtown formulas. So in this case, 100 square feet would have to be allocated amongst wherever we want to put those.
That's per sign, not per building.
No, it should be per building.
It says per sign.
I know, but I think in this case it should be per building. Because you're running this formula, unless you have a maximum on the building, that formula is going to run your way out in the stratosphere.
So the abnormally large signs that have potential.
Yeah.
Now, in truth, you could get 100 square, because you're not... Let's take the buildings that you have in the downtown now. You have a plaque up here that says the name of the building. And then over these stores, you see, this begins to fill up their whole space. It just really shouldn't. And keep in mind that if you're a tenant on the upper floors, you still have windows that you can put signs in. Because we rewrote this to say that you can have it per window. So that's a lot of advertising, frankly. And you also have these awning signs, and you also have under-awning signs. You also have projecting signs. So we could probably go back to the 100 for the total building.
So you end up with a sign with windows in it.
What's that?
One giant sign with some windows.
Now, by the way, your downtown design guidelines, everything in our formula is, and in our design standards, covers everything. The thing that's in your downtown design guidelines is language about fit between these parallel pieces, reflect the architecture of the building, and so on, which is fine. It's supplemental. But your downtown design guidelines doesn't get into the formulas of how much you're allowed to have. So we cool? I made a mistake here. We'll go back to 100 max per building. And it will take the word tenant out.
Look at the Old Coast Post site on the corner, northeast corner of May and Lewis. And it's got a bunch of units on the main floor. It's got units upstairs. I think that's building reasonably signed. I'm not sure that that building will be conforming if we adopt this sort of language. And I think we want to be careful. If we're taking what is otherwise good signage that we currently have and make it a non-conforming, I think we're making a mistake.
Well, which language are you adopting?
Well, just what we've been talking about here for a while.
The 100 square feet max for the building.
Right. I mean, certainly that building, Jeff, you know it as well as I do, if not better. It's got more than 100 square feet of signage on it.
I couldn't even guess how much is on there, but...
There's probably
wall signs?
12 units.
You have two frontages too, so that does help.
I'm just thinking of the one frontage, because the units that face on the lowest side aren't the same units that face... I mean, there's two corner units, granted, but everything else, those units have same individual frontages.
Yeah, but you could going around a corner, you're still running against the frontage.
Yeah, that's true. So,
and it should be maximum 100 square feet, not per building, but per the building face. What language are you suggesting then?
I don't know. I guess I'd want to look at that building down there and see what they have, because I think that's an example of good signage and nicely done. It seems to fit. And I think we want to be careful with what we're doing as far as if it's going to make something non-conforming that is reasonable.
One thing that I'm going to ask Zach to insert into the ordinance when we do this is a one-year public hearing requirement. And that means a year down the road, we're going to, the ordinance will require council to send this back to the Planning Commission for a public hearing again and council action. And the reason for that is a lot of this has to do with the non-conforming aspects of it. If we make a big mistake and suddenly, 90% of the signs in town are non-conforming, and the 10-year clock starts ticking on, and we want to fix that. Or if we get too far out of line on one of the other newer technologies, we would like to be able to do that again. But hopefully the ordinance will give us the opportunity to go out here for a year and test the market, if you will, and come back and fix, I think, the objectionable components.
And I think that's great, as long as the first draft that's adopted doesn't open that door and let something in that we can't fix that sort of thing.
So you're saying 100 square feet might be too small for that particular building?
Because I think that building, if we take the two frontages, must have a 150
linear feet. This runs on each frontage.
Okay. So it's probably a 100-foot long building.
But it has two frontages,
and
right?
And it's got another probably 60-foot depth on the other.
Okay,
side.
So that'd be 160 feet. That'd be
100 feet of signage.
Yeah, but this would be 100 per building face.
Okay.
So that'd be 200 square feet total if you have two building faces.
If we just take out the maximum altogether, do the requirements on each individual sign, are they controlling enough that we don't have to put a maximum in? Because you are telling us with this diagram that you are putting restrictions on each individual sign. So why would it matter what the total is? Because we have to get out of 1 square foot for 1 linear foot.
In the downtown, that probably wouldn't be such a big issue, but as you get out of the downtown and you get into much bigger buildings, then you do need a max. In the downtown, I don't think there's only one or two buildings that get to this scale. And I don't think there's any building in the downtown. Well, this is 70 linear feet, as an example. In the downtown, you might be able to do away with the max, but you couldn't not do it in the other zones.
Yeah.
That's an option. We would still, I think, the points I think we made, though, is that tenant ought to come out, and your issue is your formula wants to cover in a whole building, not each individual tenant. And if you don't want to do a maximum size, then you definitely need to not go above the 2 square feet per one lit, because this is what you're going to get. And that's at the upper range of downtown buildings. They tend to range from 1 square foot to 2 square foot per linear foot.
So, in your experience, you've looked at hundreds and hundreds of signs, and there must be areas like, say, the new downtown Mill Creek, for instance. You say, okay, this is well designed, well developed, there's good signage. Is 2.0 too high? Should we go to 1.5?
No, it's just that I wouldn't go above that. And keep in mind, you see, you still get projecting signs, and you still get window signs, awning signs, posture signs. In fact, the least usable, least impressionable signs on this kind of a building are the wall signs.
Unless you're at the corner.
True. But if you're the pedestrian or driving down the street, and that's what you're marketing to, these signs, and if you're on a street level, these signs are more important than the wall signs.
I think you take out the maximum then, because the control is a per sign control, and left, fall, or right. And so the building on the corner there, Dave, it's fine, it's conforming. Because each individual sign conforms, we don't care what the total is.
So if there's a dozen signs and they're all smaller than 100 feet, you're fine.
Okay. Okay, next. This is a single tenant. This is in your general commercial, service commercial. Right now, your height is 35 feet. If you're a single tenant, you can have 100 square feet of freestanding and 200 square feet of wall up to the maximum. And your maximum here is 200 square feet. Now, if you have more than 400 linear feet of furnished property, then you can have 2 signs. I've just used a monument here to show you the same thing. This would be, I'm not going to guess which properties this would be. I assume this would be your shop, your supermarkets. Now, see how that's pretty high. But 35 feet is what you're currently allowing on Highway 2. So if there weren't signs out there, we've been generally going at about 24, because you can see the ratio to the street. Because most of the buildings are going to be single story.
David?
I'm looking at the photos.
Mm-hmm.
And it seems that when I look at the general sign design principles, the ones you're suggesting that we avoid are the ones that have examples of the really tall signs.
Yeah.
And I'm wondering how many of our signs on Highway 2 are actually in that 30 to 35 foot range. And do we really need to, or should we really go that high on that corridor?
I would bet most of them are in that area. I don't see many 24 or 25 footers out there. Not that I mean, you can set whatever you want to as your height, but I would guess that there'd be quite a number above, say, 25 feet.
So the Schwab is above 25 feet?
I can't remember.
Yeah. Seems to me that the ones we see that are really the tall ones are those single pole, big sign on the top, which, from everything I'm reading and what you suggested, those are the type of signs one try to avoid.
The single pole, for sure. See, this looks very different with double poles than if you had just a single pole.
New Autobahn store has a single pole and it's real high.
I don't think they're 35 feet, though, but...
No, I think it is.
Anyway, I have concerns about the 35-foot height. I think there's a lot of business out there that have done good jobs in the probably 20-25-foot range. Jeff, I don't know what businesses you've talked up to up there. Do you have any?
I think a lot of the sign height on Highway 2 has to do with trees and landscaping. We've got that buffer layer of trees, and most of those trees are 20, 25 feet tall trees. And I think that's, it's been a self-fulfilling prophecy. Do you want streetscaping or do you want good signage? And I don't know how to resolve that issue because the state put the trees in there, so.
Well, your issue with trees is you either go above or you go below.
To bring them all in.
Well, you can see here, this, here you're trying to go, this is a, not a typical street tree, but you're trying to go above it. If you were to go to the monument and you were, say, Home Depot or Best Buy, this would be squared off down here at this level where you'd see it. But this is kind of a general compromise between your current code. Your current code is 35 feet and approximately 100 square feet of freestanding. Now, that's also a lot of wall, and you see why you need the 200, you need a maximum number here.
Dave, would it be reasonable to put a requirement there that they're going to go above 25 feet, for instance? They have to have two poles. And that's going to change the appearance, as you say, Tom, dramatically of the sign. I know it's going to drive cost up some, too, but maybe it's a compromise.
There are other ways of doing it with one pole. You saw some that had fins that made it look a little bit less like it was just stuck up there. I don't know that I would go and mandate two poles, because you're also going to get it. Look at the, just on this example, you're back almost 30 feet now, and it all depends on what kind of site area you have. And I put the poles in the opposite ends. You could put a wider pylon kind of frame to this, as shown in some of those examples, and it wouldn't look like it was the West Shop type sign.
So, the chairman, you want to extend?
Okay. You're making a motion to extend the meeting past 9 o'clock. Commissioner Shirley made that motion. We have a second.
Second.
Second by Commissioner Demarest. Any discussion? All in favor say aye.
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 Opposed? Thank you, Jeff.
Mr. Chair, I would be leery of trying to regulate things like single pole versus double pole. We're getting into design that I think goes beyond the scope of what the sign code should be.
Yeah, I think in the sign guidelines, they are guidelines, and I like the idea of being able to say, let's try to avoid it, but I think you're right. We shouldn't be regulating it.
There's so many ways to do it that if you start mandating certain solutions, then you're more likely going to lose more often than you're going to win.
Yeah. Is this the building you were talking about?
But to summarize, this is pretty much what your current existing condition, existing ordinance specifies. And it's frankly not bad. You're here pretty much on the conservative side of the signage allowances. Okay, go to the next one. This is your multi-tenant. And I made a mistake when I did the table at first. This would allow 200 square feet and 200 square feet if there's, you're over, and you go up to 300 square feet on the wall. Now, normally the multi-tenants like to call themselves out on the freestanding. It's on the wall, these would all be split up amongst the different tenants, just like the example we had downtown. That's not bad. Now, you see your 35-foot height here is probably, it all depends. Modern design would put you into this format because it's much more visible to the street, especially as you get down in these sizes. When you take these sizes up in the sky, they're not as much impact. But this is a pretty conservative number. This is pretty close to what your current allowance is.
Does it depend on your speed limit of the road that's going past it? I imagine it depends on whether the low sign is more better versus the tall sign. Because I notice when I'm driving 40, 45 miles an hour, It's the tall sign is the one I'll see first.
If you were running highway speeds, this is what you're going to go for.
Well, that's on fire.
No, that's true. If you're running
over,
you start running at 50 and 60 miles an hour, this sign has to get bigger just for you to be able to comprehend it at that speed. This size is pretty much a city street or city arterial or 35 mile an hour.
35
No.
Okay, next. This is what we've introduced as the off-premise multi-tenant advertising. And the example here is Galaxy Theater, which is back in North Kelsey, and it wants some visibility up on Highway 2. And this would say you can put one of these signs up, and you can put it only on the intersecting corners of arterials, and it has to be 100 linear feet from any other sign up there, and you can, in effect, put up to this amount of square footage, but it has to come out of what you're allowed on your site and off-site.
So it's taken out of your total allowance.
You're still in the same allowance. The question is, you're given some options about where to put it.
Okay, I understand.
So I don't think there's any place to put it.
I'm sorry?
I don't think there's any place to put it.
Yeah. Well, they have to. I think the example he was used was AutoZone.
Mm-hmm.
AutoZone was there in the corner where you turn to go into North Kelsey. And so if Galaxy Theater wanted to do this or any of the other tenants, they'd have to negotiate with AutoZone. And they'd have to be 100 linear feet from whatever AutoZone sign is. And if they were to do that, then Galaxy has to figure out how it splits up its allowance between its on-site and its off-site. It doesn't get more signage area. It gets the same amount. Just have to determine how to do it.
Good.
Now, this example shows the maximum that would be allowed if it was a multi-tenant arrangement. And I think that we've limited this to just to multi-tenants and just to monuments, so they're not competing with any other freestanding sign.
David, don't pretty much all those businesses have freestanding signs? I mean, you mentioned AutoZone. They've got one, clearly. There's an Arco across the street. They've got theirs. Denny's got theirs. I'm not sure about Rite Aid. I mean, right, already you've already regulated out the potential for doing the sign.
Yep.
If I were Galaxy, I would go to AutoZone and say, I want to take this where I can on your corner outside the visibility zone, and I need 100 linear feet between what I want to do here and your sign.
They don't have 100 linear feet of block.
Well, then you're going to get stuck. Yeah. Unless you can talk AutoZone into being part of this.
Have AutoZone take their sign down and incorporate it into the monument.
Into this.
Or co-locate or add it to it.
This is a tough conundrum to solve, because we went from off-premises, what we were talking about last meeting, to this.
Right, and a big change.
And it's a hard, we had an hour-long conversation about how this works, and it's going to require a lot of compromise between the associated businesses that are on this off. So, the 100 feet, maybe you want to change that distance. I don't know.
And yet you don't want to have a cluttering of individual signs at the proximity of the corner.
I think the rules that we settled on was, one, they don't get more sign area. They get to split it, but they don't get more. Because if they're allowed more, then you get into the problem of equity. Two, it has to be negotiated in the private market, that you're not going to overlay over top of the property any other property owner the right of some off-premise person to come and do it. And three, they've got to figure out how they split it amongst themselves and how they manage and operate it.
Jeff, I got a question. And on the corner there by the AutoZone, Payless Shoe Source, I think, has a sign just below the AutoZone sign. How do they work that?
It's private. It's totally between the
two owners.
Yeah. Right. Okay. And then this could be theoretically replicated down the corner of Chain Lake and Highway 2 for the Safeway Ben Franklin Shopping Center. Could be replicated again at the corner of Woods Creek and Highway 2. For the Albertson Shopping Center, and then again at Old Owen. That's the concept, to allow these shopping centers to start to direct into their shopping center, help the wayfinding aspect of it.
It would sure look a lot nicer, too. David?
Those shopping centers you mentioned already have frontage on Highway 2.
A lot of them do, but some of them don't. That's the problem.
Certainly Safeway and Albertsons do.
I don't know if Albertsons actually owns frontage on Highway 2. The shopping center may own frontage on Highway 2.
You're right. Albertsons owns their space.
They own their space. And that Safeway's, Ben Franklin's the same example. Ben Franklin owns their land, but they don't own actual frontage on Highway 2. The bank sits in front of their property. And then the Hanson property, the middle, the little strip of retailers, owns that strip out driveway out to Highway 2. So this is a situation where if one ownership leased property to all those people, it wouldn't be a problem. But in that case, we have multiple owners. This is a solution to let them gang together and get an off-premises sign that helps the whole development.
Well, ostensibly, this could actually begin to consolidate signs if they all start to negotiate to do it. And it could actually improve circumstances along Highway 2.
Which is a really nice thought.
Now, here's the thing, though. I've shown this as a monument no higher than 25 feet. And it's written to be a freestanding, which could be back to what you saw on the page before. Do you want to restrict this to monuments at 25 feet?
It's a really tall monument. And that's a solid mass of space taken out of your horizon. I think it's too high.
Well, it'll get bigger if you drop it down. But the point being, right now, it's just 200 square feet of freestanding. We don't specify anything other than that. And it's 35 feet high, just like every other freestanding sign.
Wayne?
I have a problem with the monument sign with the traffic intersection.
That's true. It would visually block. Whatever it is would have to be out of the triangle anyway. But even approaching the triangle, it could be a visually blocking. So you want to leave it just freestanding and not get into the specifics of it?
So freestanding would allow for two poles, perhaps, and lift it up 10 feet off the ground.
Be 35 feet.
That would be the best.
Okay.
Dave?
If we're trying to maybe encourage cohabitation of signs, for lack of any better word offhand.
Co-location.
Co-location, you're right. We're talking about off-premises at 25. We're talking about someone's own sign at 35. How do you then regulate what a co-located sign is? I mean, also now Galaxy has theirs at the top because they're willing to pay for it, and they're up 35 feet with an off-premise sign. So I'm just trying to... You had an hour-long discussion with it the other day, and that discussion probably could have taken 3 hours.
Whoever goes into this has to split what they're allowed on site into this. This isn't over and above what they're allowed on their site.
I understand, but so they go to AutoZone and say, hey, AutoZone, build us a 35-foot sign out here. We'll pay you X dollars and we want to be at the top of it. What would stop that?
That's free market.
But free market is free signs. I mean, this isn't free market when it comes to signs. We're regulated.
But negotiating the details of the sign's free market, as long as they don't violate the overall size or the placement or the number that they get to have.
If Galaxy has 1,000 square feet of signage on their site right now, they're fully maxed out. They're going to have to remove something from their site in order to bring 100 square feet out to the off-premises site. So they can't exceed their maximum allowed for their premises. This is additive or included in their maximum site signage. How it's divvied up, if Galaxy wants 100 of this and everybody else gets 10-foot squares, that's a private real estate transaction. They're buying signage real estate on that private monument site.
Is it possible? I mean, our ordinance currently doesn't allow off-premise advertising. What about if we incorporated a component of the off-premise advertising that required co-location?
Well, it is multi-tenant. It has to be multi-tenant.
Well, but I mean, in an effort to move forward with greater flexibility here and to work with these business owners that would like to get some signage out toward the highway, for instance. Say, yeah, great, you can do it, but you have to do it in the form of a co-location rather than a totally new additional sign up there on the highway.
Well, their restrictions would be the linear feet apart they are. So as you say, AutoZone doesn't have enough frontage, so they'd have to do this. But if you require co-location, then you're into the market for sure. Then you're requiring, and then you'd have to negotiate which owners, you'd have to force those owners into doing the whole consolidated sign solution. Versus if you're saying, these are the allowances, you guys have to figure out in a market sense how you do it. Then you're going to stay free of all those complications.
Okay, thank you.
I wouldn't go below the 100 linear feet, though, or you're going to end up with a multiplication of potential signs. My gut feeling is you're over the long term, you'll start to see more of this because it's better marketing for them. And Galaxy certainly has an incentive to get AutoZone to want to play along.
One follow-up?
Yes, David.
We've got the 100 feet in the first freestanding off-premise multi-tenant advertising. We don't have 100 feet in the monument off-premise multi-tenant directions. The difference on that would be what?
This is advertising. The directions are the ones where it's out there back, located behind, and it has arrows. It says, and remember, look at the size. I think the off-premise directionals are only 32 square feet or much smaller.
Small, yeah.
And 24 square feet, 10 feet high.
Yeah, and they're just to say Joe's down the street.
That's a pretty big directional sign though, isn't it? 10 feet high, 24 square feet.
If it's multi-tenant, it's, and again, we didn't try to specify a number of tenants. No, that's not particularly big. But you would see a lot of that is industrial parks and even some shopping centers. It's not very big, really, because it's a monument, again.
But it could be right next to the AutoZone sign.
No, because if you read the directions, it has to be off an arterial or a collector that leads to whatever the property is.
Wouldn't that be North Kelsey?
Not the way I would think it's defined, no. It would be your industrial park people. It could be some of your commercial shopping center people who are located back in the back of the center.
Thank you.
Next. All right, this is the last sign. This is your limited highway intersections. This is 180 square feet. It's a single tenant. They don't allow any multi-tenants out here. If 45 feet is a standard for these kind of quote highway intersections. And I put the elevation of 522 here at only 15 feet. Now, at Main Street, it's probably around 25 feet. And then, of course, it goes up and down as it goes up towards Highway 2. So the point of these kinds of signs, now you're doing 50 and 60 miles an hour, and they tend to be bigger, and they tend to have bigger lettering and so on. That's a big sign, for sure. And if that's digital and video, that's a big display.
I believe this is being brought, Jeff, by the issue with the new highway construction.
It was promulgated by multiple different things, but when General Motors came in and asked Speedway to upgrade their facility, signage was a big component of it. And when the new construction started, they felt that their current height was inadequate. And they also were asking for video. So that was a three-part deal. It's 180 foot, the right number. I don't know the answer to that question. That's a hard, I can't imagine somebody buying a video screen that big, but then again, there are a few of those around.
That one's only 10 grand.
Yeah.
Do they want 45 feet, Jeff, or have we just picked that number?
No, I picked that number, and that number is based on this kind of highway characteristic. And it's frankly, 45 feet is not very high for that, for the speeds that you're doing on that highway.
Certainly, I drove that highway after a meeting 2 weeks ago, specifically to look at this. And if you are eastbound coming into town from down toward Woodinville, the new highway overpass is higher than the current one. And you see the tops of the lights at the Dodge dealer. That's all you can see. And I talked to Paul and I asked how tall those were. And I don't know that we know yet. I have no idea how high those lights might be. And then my question was, how much of an obligation does the city have to compensate for things that we have no control over, such as highways being built at higher heights? To me, a 45-foot high sign that could be 180 feet of video screen, that's going to be huge. And certainly, you mentioned Chevrolet. They've got great visibility from both New and Old Road. And I think they have undersigned their site.
Probably. They're putting new ones up now.
So they're putting new ones up now with the current code that apparently works for them.
If that were a static sign, that wouldn't be that big. If that's a video sign, that's a huge screen. The range for highway commercial signs is between 140 and 200 plus. If you're on I-90, they get up to 300 and 400 square feet, depending on how far away from the highway they are. The average height on highway commercial can run anywhere from 20 to 80 feet. And I thought that 45 feet, considering the fact that you're elevated up, is probably not too bad. And the 180 is an arbitrary number that's kind of midpoint. But if that's a video, that's pretty big.
I would be really curious to know if you'd even see a 45-foot sign from the eastbound lanes of 522 now with that new construction. I think you may not. And I wonder what we're accomplishing by doing that.
Yeah, I mean, yes, I wonder about the total square foot. Maybe not so much the height as the size of the sign itself. Look back at the map on below the American flag. It's about 4 feet by 5 feet in the back of the room. So multiply that by four times, and you're reaching somewhere in the range of
80 feet
of 8 by 10. That's 80 feet.
It'd be about the size of that screen right there, wouldn't it?
It took that brick wall, roughly 9 feet high, probably close to 20, maybe a little wider. There's your 180 square feet.
That's huge.
That is.
But when it's 45 feet high, it's not that big.
Which areas exactly are we talking about? The current dealership, that's the only place?
No, and then also on US-2, we approach US-2.
The way they can get over that is by bringing in Tilburg and getting higher.
I don't think the height is as high when you compensate for the highway. I think the question, and to me at least, the question is the square footage, particularly if it's video. And I'll probably say go to the lower range of 140 rather than 180 if it's going to be video.
Which would reduce that, say, 20%.
Dave, Tom, you're mentioning up at Highway 2, and I'm not sure where you're referring to up there. Because we have general commercial along zone land up there. There is no service commercial. The only commercial corner there is...
This is proposed in the general commercial and in the mixed use zones, only where they abut US-2. Only per parcel contiguous is SR 522 intersection right away at Main Street and US-2.
Okay. So point out.
If I read your map, it would.
Starbucks.
It would be these areas right here. And the area down right here.
What is there?
There's a small car dealership there.
There's a car dealership here, and I don't know what's here.
Really nothing.
It's Fred Meyer.
Oh, the Fred Meyer.
So Fred Meyer, at the end of this, would be able to put up one of these big signs on there in their parking lot.
If that's what you go for, yeah. If they have property that abuts that intersection, yes.
They do.
Wow. That's huge.
And then potentially, if we build a bypass, it would also be out east of town.
Then you have to redefine it here, because we've defined it only as Main Street and US 2.
That would be US 2.
Oh, if it were relocated?
Yeah, around 2.
There would only be property that abuts that. It'd have to be an intersection that has local access.
I'd be very concerned with it, Fred Meyer.
Why?
It's out of character with the rest of the signage that we're talking about for that court. I mean, at least down here where the car dealers are, it's kind of a unique set up by itself situation where there's limitations on visibility. I mean, from 522 coming down to Highway 2, you see everything up there. I mean, you see Starbucks sitting inside Starbucks having their coffee. The visibility is so good. Why does one need to throw a 45-foot sign up in that mix? I just don't see the rationale.
Okay. And there's low speed limits there. You know, it's not something that you have to...
Well, you have to slow down here to get off anyway.
Yeah, right.
Here you're driving by, and that's the circumstance.
So strike the Highway 2 intersection?
At a minimum, I would say, and I still have a reservation about 45 feet down there, but yeah, certainly Highway 2, 522 intersection.
Okay, so if we keep it here and we keep it at 45, do you want to go down to 140 rather than 180?
I'd like to know how high the light standards are.
Well, Cobra is 45 feet. Do you have Cobras in here?
I have no idea. But that is not an animal. So I don't know.
Well, we haven't talked about the prison sign yet, have we?
video that one?
That's right, definitely video pulsating. 24-hour service.
I disagree on the Fred Meyer area, because that's going to be a bypass, and I think that's just as appropriate.
It doesn't bother me that much because it's going to be all developed up in there. It seems like it's going to stand in the middle of nowhere. But it's not. The theater's big. Walmart's going to be big. You know, Lowe's is big. That's not.
When you're coming up 522 in that circle, you shouldn't be putting a sign anyway.
That wouldn't be too concerned about bypass. The first phase of the bypass is to go from Highway 2 and 522 northeast to that future interchange there. The next phase goes from that interchange east to the back to Highway 2. And even phase one is years away, yet it's not, even phase one is not on the horizon at this point.
You could always amend your table when that comes about and you know what you're doing. But if you were to take this out of play now and just stick to this, you could see how that works, and that's the least risk.
Yeah, I'm all for personally taking it out at the Highway 2 intersection, but I also would like to see the sign size, the square footage, go down from 180 square feet
to 140.
Yeah, that's huge. Even at 45 feet up, that's still huge.
How big is the billboard? You know, they put up a billboard size. What is the square footage of that?
Yeah. Billboards are much bigger. They're around 400 to 500 at least.
Because in Omaha, along the highways, they have those up and they are video. Mm-hmm.
I think the difference to remember here too, though, is this is not set back from the highway. You're right smack on the right of way. If you were going through Ellensburg, they have huge signs, but they're a quarter mile away from I-90. That's why they're so tall and they're so big. This is going to be right in your face. So I think the height is to get up above. Given that you're crossing the bridge right there, you're going to want to be up above high enough that it's not right in your line of sight. But I think your size does not have to be that big. Even 140 might be too big.
That's what I'm thinking. I mean, you know, you go down to I-5 corridor, down to Tacoma, down in that area, And they got a bunch of signs like that down there, but they're way back off the expressway.
They're also tribal lines.
Yeah.
Billboard size.
They're huge.
Huge.
But for our little intersection here, I don't see why, you know, they'd have to have a sign that large. First of all, I don't think they could afford a sign that large. I mean, just to put a sign out there, I think that would be overkill. I'd like to see the sign size limited.
Wait, the size of this screen? Be about the size you'd be comfortable with?
That's too small.
That's tiny.
Yeah, that's a little small.
I think 8 by 15. If you extended the screen over to this edge.
Something like that.
Yeah. Even 140 wouldn't be ridiculous, but 180 is huge.
Well, if you extended the screen over to about here, that's about 100 to 120.
Yeah.
And it really needs to be 45 feet up to get up above what's they're going to be on 522. And if I were putting the sign up, I wouldn't put it right on the edge. I'd want to pull back a bit just to be more visible. But this will allow them to put it right there on the edge.
Yeah, I'm 440, I guess.
That's what you want to do for tonight?
Yeah.
Okay.
I think it's a good idea to differentiate between the Fred Meyer intersection and the Carby intersection. And not allow at the north end.
Right.
When the bypass gets started, we'll come back to me and
revisit.
And then we'll all be all gone.
I agree with that.
You think?
I agree with that.
365
years.
Okay.
Anything else, Tom?
Only that the table. The table, the only thing that I call out, we've pretty much covered the things that we've covered in the table. The purple is what I highlighted just because I thought you needed to make decisions on those, but you've made most of those decisions. I think that without going into the table itself, the only new things were that the off-premise directional, which is the arrow signs, are monument required, and they're allowed in the service commercial and in the industrial area. And in the changing message sign, I expanded that to include food service, like the drive-ups, and the movie, just to call them out.
We also said we're going to add video.
I'm going to modify the table for the video. And I think that's it. I think we've covered pretty much everything else. The design guidelines, I incorporated the good and the bad and the ugly in the very front. I incorporated all the digital examples, so they're displayed throughout. But I added three pages, and they display the digital printouts for drive-up food service and for gasoline. And I left in what's called the portable reader boards. Those are the ones mounted on vehicles. Except that you only allow those for events. So if the fairground was going to do something, they could pull up a vehicle and run a special event on that. But they can't drive around town. Can't be used for products. Okay, as I said, it covers all the specifics in the downtown design guidelines. The only thing that's in the downtown design guidelines are more harmonized with architectural details and so on. That's not something that we've covered in this.
Dave, Tom, you touched on that one aspect of the freestanding, the off-premise signs, which applies to both just the advertising and the directional sign, where it talks about arterials and collectors. And as we look at footnote J, it talks about, at least in one of the districts, the property itself cannot be on an arterial or collector. That doesn't apply, I don't believe, to general commercial, does it?
No, I'm sorry, I'm not following it. For the off-premise directional?
For off-premise.
Right.
Well, let's take, for example, what was it? footnote J talks about properties that are on an arterial collector don't qualify for off-premise.
Correct.
Now that doesn't apply in the general commercial area, right?
What do you mean?
That footnote doesn't apply. It applies in the professional office, but not the general commercial. PO has the footnote J.
Okay, then I wonder if I left the J out of, I just forgot to put the J in.
Well, my question then going back to discussion on the off-premise signs. Galaxy Theater, I believe, is located on an arterial collector, is it not, North Kelsey?
They would not be allowed an off-premise directional. They're allowed an off-premise advertising.
Okay. So Lowe's, then, as an example, would, same thing, be allowed an off-premise advertising but not directional.
Are they located on an arterial or a collector?
Well, they're on North Kelsey.
Then the same would apply to them.
Which goes into Chain Lake, which I believe is a collector. So is there supposed to be a footnote J under the general commercial? Or
did I just leave it off?
I don't know.
I've been known to do that. I think it's on the next page. Off-premise up here, it has a J.
It has a J for the directional. Mm-hmm. And then... doesn't have one for the off-premise advertising, multi-tenant advertising.
Correct.
Now, Galaxy wouldn't be a multi-tenant, would it?
For if they went to the advertising, that is a multi-tenant advertising off the off-premise, that whole example that we've gone through. So they would not get the directional, which is the arrow signs that down the street.
Which would go on a monument.
Correct. The whole purpose of the directionals, which are monument only, are for businesses that are located back in behind the complex and need some kind of arrow to direct people to know how to find them. But if you're located on an arterial or a collector to begin with, you've already got that street visibility and that's, you don't need a directional.
For instance, if the landfill was developed,
right,
then they would be eligible to have a monument out on Kelsey that would direct them back behind Fred Meyer, behind Kelsey Road Station, okay, behind Galaxy Theater,
okay,
to allow them to get that frontage directional. Okay. Their advertising would all be back on their site.
Because that site's not on the collector.
Correct.
And I can see that. So when we used Galaxy as an example, wanting signage out on Highway 2, they're not a multi-tenant building.
But the signage would have to be
a multi-tenant.
So they would have to find someone else back there to go along with them?
Right. So Walmart, Lowe's.
Or AutoZone if they're consolidating on the frontage.
Yeah.
They can't go out there with their own standalone Galaxy sign.
Okay. But if they had a second tenant in that building, they could then do it. There's no minimum on the number of multi-tenants.
No. Well, two.
Two.
It'd be at least two.
And should it be a higher number? Again, I'm trying to avoid proliferation, Jeff.
No, I think that's a good point, too, because if you're giving them 200 square feet, that could be 100 and 100 if they were equally aggressive alpha dogs.
10 by 10, that's still a good size sign.
You might want to debate that, whether you have a minimum number of tenants to qualify. Question is, how many do you need?
Well, I'm just thinking of the number of businesses that might be back there eventually that might want to be represented in this way. And I think the directional signs aren't... Yeah, I'd rather see monument signs that are directional with a list of the businesses back there than these big, colorful signs focusing on one individual business. And we've got a picture in the book that Bill, you pointed to me a little while ago. It was a directional sign that I think is probably very effective and attractive too, without adding to the clutter of what we have up there. So I raise the question.
Well, no, I think you got two, and I think there are two issues. The off-premise directional is to help people find where you are because you're not visible off of an arterial or a collector. So that's truly the properties that are back in the backwoods. If you allow those for just anybody, willy-nilly, whatever you want, then what you're going to end up with is a whole bunch of directional signs on Highway 2 saying, well, we're just down the street. That will really proliferate things.
Right.
But if we allow an off-premise advertising sign, and part of that is indirectly we're going to force co-location of signs, and you have to take it out of your existing allowance. You're not allowing extra signs. Then we're probably going to end up with a reduction of signs.
And you're talking about taking out of the allowance on the host part.
Correct.
The hostess.
Well, whoever's on the sign has to take it out of it. If it's a tenant on the sign, he's going to take it out of his space as well.
But again, picking on AutoZone, because we've been using them all night, they would have to reduce their signage by the amount of off-site advertising or not?
Yeah, they would have to take it out of whatever their allowance for their freestanding and their wall sign is. Now, if I were AutoZone and the Galaxy made me a good deal, I'd probably get the same amount of space in the Galaxy sign. I'd probably go for it because I still get my wall sign.
And then no one else back there gets to come up and advertise on that corner.
No, they can all come if they're willing to pay the price. I think your issue is, and it's a good issue, how many qualifies to be multi-tenant? I mean, two is a pretty small number if we're giving them 200 square feet. We're not using a sliding scale. We're just saying you have to take it out of your other signage. So I think the real issue is how many qualify to be multi-tenant? What's the bare number? And do we still leave it at 200 square feet, knowing, though, that they're going to be taking it off what they're allowed somewhere else?
I don't know what the answer is.
I'd be really interested if you ran that past Galaxy and get their reaction to.
Well, I know what Galaxy wants.
You're giving them some allowance because, frankly, they develop back independently in single lots back off of the visible corridor. But on the same token, you're saying you don't get more area. You get the same. It's just a question of where you put it. And you've got to negotiate with whoever's got the frontage that we don't end up with more poles sticking out of the ground. And that's a pretty good trade-off.
And the first one in is going to cause all the others that are a week behind to scream, aren't they?
They'd have to buy it from Galaxy if Galaxy's got the sign. That's called free market.
Yeah, you know, I think we talk about, and I'll stop, we talk about Congress kicking things down the road. In some extent, that's what this is doing here, where we're trying to give the area as a whole more exposure up front, and you're really making it possible for one big player, one big person on the block, to take full control.
It's a buyer's market.
Yeah, I think what I see, when they put in a new complex, like the complex next to the theater, they have their advertising sign per complex. So when they put in a complex, they put in all the spaces in there, and then each tenant just takes a space. And I've seen that in a number of places. But what we're doing is the cart's behind the horse here. We already got a bunch of tenants out there, and we're trying to figure out how can we make it so that everybody gets a little bit of advertising and it looks pleasing and it's not a safety issue, and everybody's happy. Well, I don't think we're going to get there.
I don't think we need to make everybody happy. We want it to look pleasing. Yeah. That's the bottom line.
And you're compensating for the fact that they're not single owner developments.
Right.
And that's what makes it a little difficult.
Yeah.
If you're a little business, XYZ, Taco Rio La Bamba, your advertising is going to say next to Galaxy Theater. So the off-site premises advertising sign for Galaxy Theater is going to help Taco Rio La Bamba get people to them too. So there is a bit of a hierarchy of the big boys are going to, most likely that sign's going to have Walmart, Galaxy Theater, and Lowe's on.
Right.
And
You brought up a point, though, earlier in the evening where you said, why couldn't they have one screen instead of dividing it all up, just have the message change and it would be gal? Because you said you cannot sequence. And you'd be sequencing if you went from Galaxy to Lowe's to something else. You're not allowing sequencing. So that's automatically going to divide it up into individual sign components.
That's not a slideshow?
No, because that would be sequencing. In the way we define sequencing, you're following with a different message. Slideshow is still the same advertiser, the same concept.
But we allow successive displays as long as there's no dead space between them.
Yeah, but you're not allowing the Burma Shave, which is sequencing. So Burma Shave, you know, you drive down the road, you have the first message, the second message, going from one tenant to another tenant to another tenant is sequencing.
Okay. Paul, are we still? We're still on the issue of just trying to wrap this. How many tenants for a multi-tenant? There's two minimum. It's two minimum. Is that too little? Should it be three or four so that it can ensures that there may be more representation possible for those businesses behind? Or do we leave it to the free market to say whoever gets there first and works their way in is what they get?
Didn't the city at one time say, because I thought I remember the mayor saying that the city wanted to do a monument on each corner, kind of making that the North Kelsey Mall or something like that?
Well, we wanted to permit it.
Oh, you wanted to permit it. Okay.
And ideally, that sign out there on the top of it would say North Kelsey or
whatever
the name of that shopping district is. So it serves a couple of purposes, wayfinding, identification of the shopping district, and also advertising for the businesses.
Does wayfinding, because I know there's guidelines and there are studies and stuff on wayfinding, is there a design, you know, that you need 5 or 10, or you need 3 big ones and you need for a bunch of little ones? Or?
Wayfinding is defined as public signage. It's different.
Okay.
And you put wayfinding wherever you need to around the city to direct you to the places you want to direct it to. Now, there's an issue whether or not wayfinding could also include commercial, like the downtown or North Kelsey or significant things like that. But wayfinding is on public right-of-way, public signage.
Okay.
But it can direct to private facilities, according to our definition.
It can. And I think the issue there is to be careful. If it's a major destination like Alderwood Mall, certainly that would be reasonable. If you're not careful and you start allowing anybody to buy into it, then you see it could really proliferate out of hand. Because it is a public sign and it is on public right away. I would say multi-tenant should be at least 3, maybe 4. 2 is probably going to leave you open to abuse.
I mean, myself, there's 4.
You want to go with 4?
That's what I'm leaning on.
Four or more?
Yeah, 4 or more.
Okay.
Is that reasonable, or does that feel like it's interfering in the market?
No, okay. No. I think whoever gets the rights to that first sign is going to, you know, they're going to be grateful. Yeah. All those people that are buying real estate on their sign.
Their first sign is going to be signed for rent.
Yeah.
The space for rent.
All right, only other thing that I had, I think that you brought up, was the murals. Were you comfortable with not doing murals?
Yeah.
Good.
As long as their grandfather didn't.
Okay. Yeah. Then is there anything, other questions you guys have, or we covered?
I had a question just for the visual, and it probably came up before, I'm sorry, it was the last meeting, but in the design guidelines, which are, you know, guidelines only, but for me, when you have the purpose and then you show what's good, and then you say what to avoid, I would like to see a picture of, no, you can't
It's not that, well, it's not that you can't. Every good sign has bad features, and every bad sign has good features. And if you try to pull out, say, this is a bad, other than what you saw up in the front, if you try to have too many avoids, your problem is there's always, then you really got to push yourself to come up with something that has absolutely no redeeming characteristic to it.
Okay.
And frankly, that gets really difficult. Plus, if you're not careful and you indicate some guy's sign, I'd have to go all the way out of state to find those examples.
I was curious about that.
Yeah, I only limited it to the very front, and I was purposely used East Washington signs. So.
Gotcha.
Anything else, Tom?
Cool, if you're cool.
Commissioners, anything else for Tom?
I agree with Jeff, though. Give yourself the ability to come back and verify in 6 months just how you're doing. You've moved from, I think your assumption was this is going to be a simple process. You can see as you're digging into it, and technology is overtaking us rapidly. So, because I'm sure there are going to be things you're going to want to revise. Okay, guys. Thanks.
Thank you very much.
Good job.
Okay, which leads us much to discussion by commissioners and staff. Paul?
I'm thinking a reminder, a public hearing, the sign code on our next meeting on the 25th. I'm not sure what else might be on that agenda at this point. Don't think anything else.
Nothing
else? Okay. Jeff, you got anything?
No. Bridget? No, thank you.
No?
Liam?
Jeff?
Any news on our vacancy?
No news.
I have one thing. I don't know if anybody else got their check today or not, but mine was short a week. So, is anybody else in
there? Oh, yeah. Thanks.
Because this has happened before, and I was just curious if that was going on.
If it was for February, then...
No, for January.
For January, it was short, because we had two meetings.
Yeah, we had two meetings. Yeah.
I don't know if the checks go out with any particular frequency. Historically, they vary between covering 1 to 3 meetings. Part of it is when
since I've been here 4 years now, it's always been the month, previous month.
4 years already?
Yeah.
No kidding. I don't even know who signs off on you guys.
4 years old now.
Edie, I think.
Do you approve the Planning Commission checks, Paul, or?
No.
Okay.
I think it's Edie.
So I would call Rose.
Call Rose?
Yeah. And because she's the one who writes all the checks.
Okay, I will do that. Who else was it? Jeff, you said?
Just for one meeting.
We got the check last week.
Okay. Was it for one meeting or two? I'll have a check it. Okay, anything else? Okay, now I'll entertain a motion to adjourn.
So moved.
Second.
Motion made by Commissioner Sherwood to adjourn, seconded by Commissioner Demarest. Any discussion?
Nope.
All in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Carried.
Good
night. This is getting old, you know?
It's
made my Mondays here until 10 o'clock tonight is not. Okay. Yeah.
So have you guys heard any objections to the
sign code? Have you been to the grocery store lately? Hey, Dave. Have you been to the grocery store lately?
No, why?
What do you walk out of the grocery store?